Hey, welcome to the List Film Podcast. I don't even know what episode this is. This is 30, 20, 14.
100.
100. Yeah. So for the new listeners, we're a weekly podcast where we pick a topic and then we list our top five picks of that topic. Of movies, that is. And just in case you were like, what? Top five of what? This week's topic is favorite movies of 2011.
Finally.
And yeah. they're not the best movies. We're not saying what the best is of 2011. That's for the Oscars. That's not our list.
It's not for the Oscars.
Yeah,
because
the Oscars always get it right.
Yeah. This is our favorites, our personal favorites. There's going to be a lot of overlap, I feel. Again, for the new listeners, it's four hosts on this podcast. Four hoes. And I am one of them, Ricardo.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Adam Scott.
And I'm Kevin.
And today we have our official second guest, who is Brian. Just introduce yourself.
Hi. Greetings. My name is Brian. I'm a friend of Ricardo's. I'm a host on a podcast called Down in Fronts, which we've been going strong for about 3 years now. And what we do is we record our own alternative commentaries to movies. So basically, you know, you pop in a DVD and you got the director's commentary. There, we do kind of the same thing, except we're not the directors in most cases. There's one exception to that. But we record our own commentaries to movies, and we've been doing that for about 3 years. So we have about, I think, 150 commentaries at this point.
Wow.
Of all various kinds of movies. So we do that. We also do a smaller show called The Intermission, which is more of like a traditional podcast. Like, we just basically like this. We pick a topic and we talk about it. And we're actually going to be changing formats into a different kind of podcast. Still talking about movies coming up here in the next few weeks. But yeah, if you're into like commentaries, I think we got a pretty good one going on. So definitely check it out.
When you said alternative commentaries, I thought like...
like polyamorous, you know, yeah, like, whips and chains.
Well, yeah, too.
And like lifestyle.
Like just 1 week, it's like just a bunch of gay guys. Just talking about,
Oh, well, one of our guys, yes, is gay. Mike Scott. So, yeah, and we're all...
alternative.
Yeah. We're all... we all work in the business in various capacities. The other guys are very much special effects guys. I'm an editor by trade. There's my friend Teague, who's a visual effects guy. I'm an editor. My friend Mike is a visual effects guy, and you might know him from the Ryan vs. Dorkman videos, the lightsaber, very famous lightsaber, internet famous, I should say, lightsaber videos. And then our other guy, Trey, has actually been in the business for like 30 years at this point and has been working in the business as like a puppeteer and a visual effects guy and now as a director and a writer and a producer. He was the Blob on The Blob in the 80s, yep. He was the movement designer on... Well, he was the quote-unquote movement designer for The Blob, but he was also the head NTI alien in The Abyss. Oh, and wow. He was like the he was one of the main visual effects guys for Starship Troopers as well. And he has a ton of other credits, too. And he's the guy that's directed the one film that we did that had a director on it. So, yeah, he's crazy, and he has amazing stories. If you're interested in checking out the podcast, one of my top recommendations would be our Abyss episode because he has many crazy stories, or also The Blob or Starship Troopers because any movie that he worked on, he's got crazy stories. But yeah,
cool.
Well, there you go. That's our guest. And today again, we're going to talk about freaking movies we liked of the past year. Yeah,
2011.
And if you're listening to this, this will be after the Oscars. Hopefully, you know, you weren't disappointed too much. Maybe you were. Mm. Probably.
Maybe, hopefully, too many people didn't get robbed this year.
No, they will.
Already robbed.
Yeah, I was already disappointed. Just going into it, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
So anyway, for Stream of the Week, I guess I'll pick it this week. The movie I've been jacking off for like 3 days is a movie called Elite Squad, Enemy Within. And basically, it's a sequel to Elite Squad. It's a Brazilian film. It's the writer from City of God. Yeah, and he wrote both these movies. And basically, you don't need to see the first one to enjoy the sequel. It's standalone films, and it's really well done, really good action. And the director of it is actually the guy that's going to remake RoboCop. So that's why I checked it out.
When's that happening?
I think that's happening now.
They're in production now.
Yeah,
because they had the thing at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Like, you know, artwork or
yeah,
something.
Concept art.
Concept art, yeah.
Cool. cool.
Yeah, so check that out. It's on Netflix streaming, and that is our stream of the week. Elite Squad, Enemy Within. And then have you guys checked out any movies?
Yes.
Let's do it. What are we talking about this week? What did you check out?
I saw The Secret World of Arrietty.
Oh, you saw it?
Yeah.
When did you see it?
I saw it Friday.
Why'd you lie to me? I asked you yesterday. You know, what movies did you fucking see?
It just wasn't on my brain. And after we talked, I went, oh, that's right. No, I watched this. And I just forgot to bring it up.
You just lied to my face, man.
He was saving it for the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't want you to know about it until right now that's at this good. Moment. So you could curse at me.
So how was it?
It's good. I mean, it's a Studio Ghibli film and written by Miyazaki, based off The Borrowers. It's entertaining. It's a little slow at times. I guess comparing it to other Studio Ghibli films, I wouldn't put it up there with like Castle in the Sky or Nausicaa or Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke. But it's very entertaining. It's got the fantasy element is great.
And it's Miyazaki? Is he doing any more stuff? He's not directing anymore, right?
There was the rumor that he was going to retire, but I don't know.
But he's still writing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Luc Besson. He's like still writing, but not
Luc Besson is just coming out with something, though, as a director, isn't
That's
he?
True. That's true. But he had it for a while. He's just writing crap. Yeah.
But I just saw something at the theater this weekend where it's like, you know, the cardboard stand. Is like, oh, hey, Luc Besson's doing something. Awesome.
Yeah, and it's like...
I don't remember what it was, but...
It's a non-English movie. And so... basically, for the new listeners and Brian, we don't review movies and we rate them on a monetary scale. So, how much would you pay to see this movie?
I'd pay $10 to see it.
$10. ArcLight being the highest price you'd pay, basically.
Oh, okay, ArcLight is the gold standard.
Yeah, exactly. And so you'd pay $11. But you have a movie pass.
I know.
So a movie pass.
I was going to say, exactly. I have a movie pass. So how does that, wreck the equation?
It's still into the equation. I mean, it's...
Yeah, if I were to watch it, I would have been fine with paying $10 for it.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. Adam, did you see anything?
What did I see? I saw This Means War.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
Brian knows. He knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, I know that. Yeah, I'm not going to be checking that film out.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. No. But you were the only sound that was commiserate with my feelings about the movie.
Really?
Oh, so it's exactly what I thought it was. Looking at the trailer.
Yeah.
It sounds like. Yeah.
Imagine Mick G makes a shittier True Lies.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
With
don't
Reese Witherspoon,
who I don't like
as the love interest for some reason.
How were Tom Hardy and Chris Pine though?
They're great. You just put them in a room together and have them act off each other. They'll be fine.
Were they entertaining? Was it worth the visit to the theater?
They're entertaining. I mean, I didn't hate myself afterwards.
Okay.
I was okay. I didn't need any consoling afterwards.
Yeah, I wasn't mad and clean yourself.
No, I wasn't mad at Savannah for making me see it. I was totally fine with it. But it's not a great movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's got fun moments. It's just
it's
fluff.
Just generic.
It's Mick G and it's a Reese Witherspoon movie, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much would you pay to go see it?
Redbox?
So really?
$1.20?
Okay. Wow.
Okay. Well, that's...
better than cable.
Yeah, it's better than cable. So you could have gotten cable, which is free.
I don't have... See, that rating is... I don't have cable, so that... I mean, I guess so...
Well, oh, okay.
A Netflix
so that's pretty
streaming?
Much close.
Yeah, Netflix streaming. Yeah, that's free. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's better than his review for The Darkest Hour where he said they should have paid me to...
Yeah, that's true.
That's a way negative...
That's bullet, negative,
yeah. Yeah.
So. Well, that's good. Brian, did you see anything?
I did, actually. I went to... AMC has their Best Picture Showcase thing, so I did that. But it's actually split over 2 days, and so I'm only going to the one day. The other day is next week. But I saw... the one that's going to be at the top of my list for 2 at 11, so I'll skip that one right now. But I also saw War Horse, Tree of Life, and The Descendants. And, I'll go ahead and just say that Moneyball was also the fourth one there, and Moneyball is my number one for the year so far. And the first three up were War Horse, number one, and then Moneyball after that, and Tree of Life after that. And it's like... Those three as a triple feature was like a Goldilocks thing. It's like War Horse is just spoon feeding, shoving down your throat. Like, here's emotion and sympathy, and here's everything like spelled out for you. And Tree of Life was the complete and utter opposite of that. Here's just some crazy crap, and it's not connected in any way. And if you put it together, good for you. But if not, go to hell. And Moneyball was like the just right in between of that, I felt, for me. So those were those three. And then Descendants I really liked. Descendants And apparently Alexander Payne knows this because my friend Trey was, we were talking about it and he was like, apparently Alexander Payne in an interview was like, fuck off to the world for exactly what I'm about to say, which was, for me, it started off a little like screenwriting 101, but then once it gets past that moment, it's, I really, really liked it. So, you know, the first 15 minutes or so, George Clooney is narrating the whole thing and he's literally looking at his comatose wife and saying, I am ready to change as a person now. Like, he's literally saying that in narration, looking straight at the camera. I'm like, okay, that's, this better go away soon. Otherwise, I'm not on board with this movie. But it did. And once that did go away, I was I really, really enjoyed it. And then War Horse is like, well, Spielberg, you know what you're doing, but you're just doing it way too hard. Way, way too hard.
And it's then, using the same move.
It's, well, it's like, do you guys know what Poe's Law is? Have you ever heard of Poe's Law? Which is this, the idea of, it comes from this guy talking about, people, like, diehard Christians on internet forums. Like, you cannot make fun of really diehard evangelical Christians online, because no matter how ridiculous of a thing you come up with to satirize their beliefs, somebody believes in something crazier than that. So it's like, War Horse, as a corollary to that, if College Humor were making a movie that made fun of what Spielberg was, War Horse is the movie they would make.
Yeah.
But it's actually
made.
Spielberg actually made it. It's like, this is insane that this is... If I were trying to make fun of Spielberg, I couldn't do Spielberg any more Spielberg than this. Which isn't to say it's not really well done, and it has, you know, certain qualities to it that you're like, damn, Spielberg, you know what you're doing. That's right, I forgot. You're Spielberg. But there's, it's just too much. It's Spielberg at 11.
So how much would you pay to see the movie?
$5?
$5.
Like second run theater?
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. All right. Jenny, did you see anything? I didn't see anything.
I don't think I saw anything this week.
No. I didn't either.
That sucks.
You didn't see Captain EO at Disneyland?
Oh, we did.
Oh, yeah.
Did that come
we
back?
We did see that.
We did. It came out some back at,
apparently
back
so.
At Disneyland. Yeah.
Wow. They're pulling Captain EO out of the vault.
Yeah.
It's got to be better than Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
It was. It was better, yeah. And, yeah.
Well, I say it like I don't know. I've seen Captain EO millions of times. It is better than Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean,
always.
I always find funny things to make fun of each time I see it, and it's just a fun movie.
Of Captain EO?
Like, yeah, just like you see the making of video, and like Lucas and like Francois Coppola are like serious
that.
About this. Like, like it wasn't a joke. Like, and then through dance, they're going to turn this evil queen into a beautiful princess.
Yeah.
And it's like, and they're like talking about it, and they're like, you know, they do the frame, you know, thing.
Yeah, the director and, trademark
yeah,
frame.
Yeah, and yeah. Like Coppola is like, was in his like serious like era when he did that. And
I made Godfather.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Francis. Yes, yeah. You did.
So it was, I think watching the making of video is funnier than watching the movie itself. So check that out.
It was good. Yeah.
Yeah. So should we get to the list? I think we're gonna have a lot of overlap, and we're gonna be talking a lot about these movies. So should we get to the list?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
All right. So usually we have our guests go last, just so you can have the last word.
That's right. I see how it is. That's
so fine. Guess who gets to go first?
Yeah, Jenny. Go ahead. Take it away.
All right. So my number 5 was Midnight in Paris.
Damn it! See, I knew this is how it was going to go. What is this on your list?
It's number 5.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I was battling
good.
Between 5 and 6. The number 5 and 6.
Yeah, me too. Very... Yeah. So good. I mean, Woody Allen, Owen Wilson was actually not terrible in a Woody Allen movie. He did a good job at it. It would have been, I think we've talked about this better before. It would have been better if it was made like a long time ago with Woody Allen in that part, obviously, but
well,
it's too late now.
I mean, it's always better to have Woody
yeah.
Allen
yeah. playing
oh,
Woody
yeah.
Allen.
Yeah.
Himself
yeah. Pretty much.
Is it another thing where it's like, you're clearly just still Woody Allen, but he's just too old to play himself
yeah.
at this point?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, he does a good job of making it his own.
He does.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. not Wilson doing parody or mimicking Woody
it's
Allen.
It's not like, which is not to say I don't like, I think his performance is amazing, but it's not Kenneth Branagh in
Celebrity.
Celebrity, that's what it is. Where it's straight up a Woody Allen impersonation.
Which was amazing.
Yeah.
It's a great impersonation, yeah. But it's still, it's like, okay, you're obviously just doing Woody Allen.
Yeah.
But. Yeah. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't understand, I didn't know going into it what the plot line was going to be. Like, I knew from the trailer, you just didn't know that he was going to be going back in time and all that stuff and the golden era and all that good stuff. And it was really interesting. And I loved all the cameo, fake cameos, I guess, you know, fake celebrities or, well, real celebrities, fake people. Okay. Anyways, you get it. All those, old timey people.
Character. Cameos.
Yes. Yeah. Character cameos. Yes. That's the word.
Historical characters.
Yeah. I like that a lot. Yeah. It was good. Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. This was the hardest list because I had like a list of like 50 movies,
yes,
and narrow it down was so difficult.
Last year was a good year for movies.
Yeah, that was the one thing that when I thought about this list, like maybe the top seven are very inspirational movies to me. And usually every year it's maybe the top four and I can maybe think of the rest. But this year just kept churning them out.
Yeah. And it was basically number six on my list. I really love Woody Allen, but it just was right out of the list.
It was hard.
I mean, a movie that makes me want to pack my bags and move to Paris.
Yes.
It's that's
which is
big.
Amazing because Paris is a real shit town. No, wait, the other thing.
Yeah.
And all the quotes that what was the main guy? The writer.
Hemingway?
Yes.
Hemingway,
all of his quotes. I know they weren't real quotes from Hemingway, but all of Woody Allen's quotes from Hemingway were, like, right when I got out of there, I was like, I have to write these down and post them on my Twitter immediately.
Yeah, I mean, the way Corey Stoll delivers them, you go, okay, that's exactly how I would imagine Hemingway being.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because he just plays Hemingway perfectly.
Corey Stoll made me like Hemingway.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've read Hemingway before and go, and after I watched, I went, I think I have to go pick up some Hemingway.
Well, just knowing about Hemingway makes me hate. Like, he was a son of a bitch bastard, but Corey Stoll made him really entertaining.
He did. Right,
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is, it's on my list too.
I really enjoyed Adrian Brody.
Rhinoceros.
Rhinoceros?
Like rhinoceros. Really like this movie. Brian, did you get the chance to see this?
No, there's actually two Best Picture nominees I haven't gotten to yet. One of them is Midnight in Paris and the other is Extremely Loud. And I'm about 95% of the way through The Help. I had to turn it off to come over here. I got about like 15 minutes left on it. But no, that's to answer your question.
It's well done.
And it's really, it's Woody Allen. Everybody's been like, this is really
good. And it's not like Woody Allen kind of, not, I don't want to say phoning it in, but you know, not.
It's classic Woody Allen.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he had written it years ago and just shelved it. Because it's very
just
much,
kind of pulled it out.
Mm-hmm. Very much like Stardust Memories.
Purple Rose of Cairo.
Magical realism, which is always fun. So
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my number three.
Oh, it's your number three.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Nice.
So we are at number five, correct?
We just started.
I'm very lost.
We're at number one. So your number one is.
We've talked about one movie so far.
So we're still at number five.
Clearly, you have not listened to the podcast. I'm always lost. On number five, I picked Tree of Life.
That was my number six. That's what I was battling with.
Nice.
So Tree of Life, if anybody knows me, this is just my type of movie. It's slow. I like slow movies. I like, you know, where things. Adam's laughing.
It's just, I don't know, for some reason, when you said it like that, I like slow movies. It's, I don't know, I was thinking like just Glacial. Nothing.
it's just, my girlfriend Michelle fucking hated this movie. She hated it with a passion.
Yeah, she did.
But I've loved everything he's done, you know, from Badlands, everything, really. So this was, I'd been waiting for a long time to see this movie. And it was worth the wait. And I think I saw it twice in theaters. It was worth the 3 hours. It's 3 hours.
Yeah.
I think.
And I remember the first time we saw it pretty late.
Yeah, it was. And I usually sometimes when it's late, I'm like, oh, man, I want to go to sleep right now. But this movie was, you know, it ended. And I was like, oh, that didn't feel like 3 hours of my life.
I've gone to movies with you guys late a couple of times. And I think I fell asleep myself in both of the movies that we saw. Had I watched Tree of Life in that same scenario, I would have gone to sleep and never waken up. I would just been put comatose forever.
You didn't like it?
I did like it. Well, yes and no. I like the actual movie that's in the middle there, and I'm a big like space and science nerd, science fiction guy, so the National Geographic special in the middle of it, too, also a big fan of. But... It's, and I get what I think he's trying to do, which is, you know, you're you're a human being and you're cosmically insignificant and yeah, bad shit happens to you, but deal with it because, you know, everybody has bad shit. Just be happy that you're alive and you can eat a sandwich. Okay. You know, awesome. Just be happy for that. I get that point, but when it goes off the rails at the end, in my opinion, how it goes off the rails, it's just like, what is going on? What is with this beach and what is happening? And it's just, Brad Pitt is amazing. The kids, I think, especially the performances of these kids, like these kids are just, because we've taken acting classes kind of at the same school. You know, the hardest thing to do about acting is just to be and not to try to act and not to indicate or just be and just live. And that's what these kids are totally doing. And it's amazing that Terrence Malick got these little kids to just do that the way they did. It's fantastic performances. And Brad Pitt is amazing, of course. I really, really like that movie, that Brad Pitt period piece in there. But the beach thing at the end that just goes on and on and on crumbles the pedestal out from underneath the rest of it for me personally. I don't know. That's me.
Well, I enjoyed it. Again, I love it. This is your number six.
Yeah, my number six.
Yeah, no. I totally get what everybody says. But to me, like, all his movies are like poems, and this was just a different type of poem that was really long, and, you know.
And everybody grabs their own meaning.
Yeah, everybody grabs their own meaning of it, and you take some of it. Sometimes you don't like some of it, and I totally understand that. But this was definitely my type of movie. And, it was really, really good.
Cinematography is
Emmanuel Lubezki.
Jessica Chastain?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was really good in
she
it, is. Too.
Yeah.
She's the redhead. Yeah. The wife. Mom. Yeah.
She's also in The Help you missed the last 15 minutes.
Not missed. I just, as soon as I'm done here, I'm going back home and finishing it. I ran out of time.
Also, watching The Tree of Life made me want to see a Jurassic Park movie directed by Terrence Malick and DP'd by Emmanuel Lubezki.
Okay, the one thing I cannot figure out about the whole movie is why the raptor dinosaur doesn't eat the injured other dinosaur. Like, he steps on the head and then he just... What's the deal with that? What's going on there?
Yeah, I thought he was going to eat him too. What happened with that?
I don't know. He got spooked. I don't know.
I thought he was breaking his head.
He got a couple raptors. He let them be, and that's what he decided to do, man.
The raptor realized his own insignificance compared to the greater cosmos.
Yeah, he's like, why do I need to eat this? I'm going to die anyway. And he just ran off.
They are that intelligent.
Yeah.
They know how to open doors.
Yeah. They know how to talk, okay? So that's my number five.
Very, very inspiring movie, sure. Yeah. Made me want to go paint really bad.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Didn't want to make me go paint.
Really? Paint. Really?
It made me want to go take pictures.
Yeah.
So you're number five, Kevin.
My number five, we already went over.
It was
Midnight in Paris.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Should have been listening.
Yeah.
Adam, you're number five.
I really want to put this as my number five just because it makes it funny in my head. Fast Five.
Really?
It's not my
ballsy.
Number five.
I mean, we knew you were.
We know you liked it.
Yeah.
It's not my number five. It's not. I couldn't. As much as I want to put it as number five, I can't do it. It's not. It's not that great.
Honorable mention, though, right?
It's definitely an honorable mention. Okay. It's kind of amazing, amazingly bad and amazing at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
But number five, Attack the Block.
That's an honorable mention.
Yes. I literally just moved it off.
That was
my
number six that I was debating with. Yeah, Midnight in Paris.
I'm glad you put it so we could talk about it.
Yes, agreed.
It was a great, great movie. I think Brian saw it a while before it. I feel like I didn't see it in theaters. I think I saw it on Redbox or something.
Oh,
but
okay.
I loved it. Brian was right. I don't say that very often, but he gave it a really good review. And it was just great fun. It was really surprising. I loved the creatures and the effects, like the practical effects.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I liked all the characters, and
the
they were kids.
The kids were great. Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
I mean, the people, the kid in Hugo and the kid from Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close could learn something from the kids in Attack of the Block, because they're actually hooligans, and I still like them better than the kids I'm supposed to like in these other movies that aren't very likable. But Attack the Block, great characters, great script, lots of fun, sci-fi.
Awesome,
creepy.
Interesting story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, of both the like big, I guess there's three like alien movies this last year. It was Paul, Super 8, and Attack the Block. And I think as much as I enjoyed Paul, I love Attack the Block way more.
Yeah.
I
think Paul, the bar had been set really high by spaced and
by it being Edgar Wright. Even though it's not Edgar Wright's an Edgar Wright film, just the fact that it's Peg and Frost.
And I don't know. It wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be, but I did enjoy it. Whereas Attack the Block just kind of blindsided me, and I loved it.
Yeah.
And it was really surprising and fun. And it was a good time.
Yeah.
It's a movie that I'll watch again repeatedly. Because there's a bunch of movies I feel like they should be on this list. Because, they're great movies and they're important. But I'm not going to sit down and watch Melancholia again.
Yeah.
Much as I liked it. I'm like, you know what? I could really go for watching The End of the World. And Major Depression.
That's kind of how I went about my list, is things that I wouldn't mind rewatching over and over.
Wouldn't mind owning.
And wouldn't mind owning. Yeah. Jenny had someone let you borrow Tree of Life, and I rewatched it like 1.5 times before she returned it.
And, oh, really?
Did you return it? Because you saw
it. Gave it back.
And it was like one of those things where I'm like, I could put it in halfway and I still enjoy it.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, because the pieces have nothing to do with each other. So it doesn't matter what part you come in.
That's true. So Attack the Block, awesome. Did you see it, Brian?
I haven't seen it. I've heard good things. I've heard my friend Trey was saying about how it's a great the aliens or the monsters are a great concept for low budget because I guess they don't reflect light is the idea. So it's like, do a low budget horror movie, make it so you physically cannot see the really difficult to do aliens. Go nuts.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's definitely on my list to check out.
It's really fun.
It's creepy. It's got some nice
scares. It's really funny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all around good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honorable mention for
Brian.
Sure.
So, my number 5, and this I say admitting that it's far, far from a perfect movie, but it just pushes certain buttons in me and the little kid inside of me. I'm going to say Muppets.
Really?
That's on my list, yeah.
I love the Muppets.
You know, it's like from a...
Yeah, my number 3.
I just saw Ricardo's face.
Yeah.
Ricardo.
I didn't see it because I don't like the Muppets.
So then you don't know.
And see, that's all. I mean, I grew up with the Muppets. The Muppets are like my friends from when I was 5, and I got to hang out with them again for 2 hours. And in the process, I got to introduce my niece and nephew to the Muppets. You know, my sister, brother-in-law, my mom. Because it came out over Thanksgiving, so I was home. And we're like, yeah, well, you guys want to go see the Muppets? And so we showed them the 1970 Muppet movie first, and they were into it, and they seemed to enjoy it. So like, okay, we'll go see the Muppets. And so we did. And it's just, you know, and there's plenty of story problems wrong with the movie, and it's, you know, it's not perfect on that front, and I'll freely admit that. But from a pure, like, emotions-generated movie, Muppets was like all there is to it.
Completely nostalgic.
Yeah, totally That's nostalgic, needed, and yeah. like you just come out of the theater. If you already grew up with the Muppets, you come out of that theater just with grinning ear to ear.
Oh, yeah,
and
for
I totally
sure.
did, yeah.
So. I think the nostalgia is the only reason why it's just an honorable mention on my list, because it's like you just like reached inside my soul and milked my nostalgia gland, which sounds really dirty. I don't know how I feel about them doing that to me in public. But
And I totally recognize that for what it is. But it doesn't matter. For whatever reason, like, I could easily see it in a slightly different situation, me having very principled outrage for them doing that to me. But for whatever reason, this time they just pushed the buttons good enough that I went, oh, you guys.
It's a great, fun flick.
Yeah, I listened to the soundtrack for that for, like, months afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
I
it's
loved
a great
it.
Soundtrack.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I've gone back and I've been listening to the Muppet Movie soundtrack quite a bit. So, yeah.
Very good, yeah. It was my number 3.
Okay.
It was everything I could possibly want in a movie.
Too bad they're not Muppet Babies. I haven't seen it then.
Yeah.
Your
life's hard.
Well, it's really hard. You're number 4.
All right. My number 4 is Bridesmaids, actually. I saw this like 3 times in the theater. Not going to lie.
Wow.
Yeah. That's how much I like this movie. It was.
Is it best screenplay good?
No. Well, no, because I know what's going to win best screenplay. But I loved it. It was everything I could possibly want in a girl comedy, but had that dirty side of it that was okay for guys, too. I don't know. I loved it. I was quoting this movie. I'm still quoting this movie. Like, to this day, I'll quote the movie.
It wasn't a chick flick. I'll say that.
No,
it wasn't.
And it's just a raunchy comedy.
It was just raunchy comedy, yeah. And it was really... People kept saying, oh, this is the female version of The Hangover. But it wasn't. Yeah. It was totally different. It was a totally different thing. And the whole cast was amazing.
I completely agree. Annie Mamolo and Kristen Wiig are fantastic writing partners. They should do another movie. It doesn't have to be Bridesmaids 2 by any means, but some other movie they should work together, because you can just tell the chemistry between writing partners when it like comes out like this. And I don't know. I saw a Q&A with them, and they're just like giggling and like best friends on, you know, at this Q&A. You can just tell they have like so much chemistry between each other. It was fantastic. I love this movie.
And it kind of introduced Melissa McCarthy to a wider audience who had
I had already liked her because I watched Gilmore Girls while it was going on. So I knew her from that, actually. And so I knew she was like funny, but I hadn't seen this raunchy side of her before. Yeah. So it was awesome. I love her.
And it was a different character than she plays like in Mike and Molly and other things she's done. Very different.
Oh,
I felt. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was definitely really funny and raunchy, and I like all the supporting cast was good. Like John Hamm as the jerk. Like it was just so good, refreshing to see John Hamm is not the guy you look up to. Like, oh man, this guy's awesome. Yeah. He's so handsome.
Wait, the guy you look up? You look up to Don Draper?
I look up to John Hamm. Okay. He's just a handsome guy, man. His hair is so amazing.
Oh yeah,
I have hair like Don Draper.
Man knows how to style himself.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, no, definitely, I enjoy that movie. Mm-hmm. Did you see this?
I haven't seen Bridesmaids, I've heard good things.
Write a list of movies.
Yeah, I
thought I did pretty well for myself this year, but I guess we'll find out as we go along. Yeah.
So that was your number four. Did anybody else put in their list? No.
Nope. Okay. I'm honorable mention.
But yeah, it's a really good movie.
Yeah.
That's okay. I'm the girl of the group. I had to do it.
Yeah, you had to. All right, my number four is I picked Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, God, I forgot that movie came out this year. God damn it. All right, honorable mention.
Planet of the Apes was my number two favorite sci-fi movie of all time. So this one, I was a little skeptic when I saw the trailer, and I'm like, what are they doing? It's all CGI. What's going on? But then I really enjoyed it. I had fun. It was a really fun movie. I like how they tied everything together. So if they eventually do a remake of Planet of the Apes, they could just – everything ties together, and it would be a – it could be a shot-for-shot remake of Planet of the Apes, and it would still work. But I like that James Franco wasn't even, like, he wasn't even credited in the poster. It wasn't a James Franco movie. It was an ape movie, which is what I liked about it. And I was also skeptical about, like, a first-time director doing this and the screenwriters. But it was really well done. I felt like they tied everything together with the shuttle and, like, how people start off dying off with the disease and... I thought it was really well done, and that's my number four.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
Yeah, we saw it together.
Did we?
Yes, we did.
Well, there you go.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. I'm a big science fiction guy, and yeah, I thought it was great science fiction. It's, you know, it was science fiction that actually had some kind of intelligent idea in it, and it was about something without, you know, being spoon-feeding about it, as opposed to being Transformers that is nominally science fiction, but it's just a bunch of loud noises. It didn't take the easy road on showing. It's like, okay, this is what we're really dealing with, and what this is, you know, how do we deal with other, you know, life forms, other animals, and the rights and entitlements, and, you know, where are these lines? Because in the real world, you know, these grand philosophical questions, they don't have nice, neat boundary lines to them. It's all just a spectrum of gray with very fuzzy lines all over the place. And it's like, well, how do you really do this? And if you do it wrong, then what happens? And I thought that was just a great portrayal. And definitely just a great execution of filmmaking craft. Andy Serkis, his performance, but also I will get lynched if I don't also give props to the visual effects guys that are behind this, giving my co-hosts, but it's amazing. I mean, that the actual work, both on Andy Serkis' side and on the visual effects guys' side of that whole process, is just absolutely amazing.
How did Andy Serkis not get nominated for that? That's what I want to
know. There's a whole big debate about that that's raging on, and we actually have an intermission about that, about whether it's... Because a lot of visual effects guys, you know, don't... They don't feel like Andy Serkis should get that, get all the credit for that, because a lot of the performance, you know, some people's point of view on it is just, there's Andy Serkis and we just paint over him, and, you know, but it's still Andy Serkis under there. Andy Serkis is still under there, but there are a lot of performance decisions that are being made by the visual effects guys on the post side of it, And a lot, it's not just stuff gets put on top of him. Stuff does get changed. And it's a really fuzzy gray area of like, well, how much does it get changed and
they
at what point?
They could give everyone an Oscar.
And really, questions like those.
I like your idea.
Questions like those reveal how absurd the whole Oscar thing is, because it's like, well, you're going to give this guy the best writing Oscar, but most of the film was improv. That it's like, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of mm-hmm. a thing. It's like, when you really get down to it, yeah. everybody's job on a movie set depends on everybody else's job, like best editing, but what if the material you're given is crap or whatever, you know? So, but that's a question that is raging on in the visual effects community at the moment.
Wow.
Yeah.
I opened up some boxes.
Yeah. Close those boxes.
There are people cursing right now.
They're like, fucking I know. Jenny, man.
No more. No more.
So, yeah, that's my number four.
Yeah, that definitely, that movie
was a,
pulled.
That was an honorable mention for me.
Oh, yeah. It definitely pulled at my emotions.
Your monkey strings?
My, my monkey strings.
Your monkey's heart?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that is my number four. Everybody's honorable mention. Kevin?
Yes, my number four is We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Really?
Ah.
Yes.
I need to see that still.
Yeah.
The direction by Lynn Ramsey is amazing and it's very inspiring. She creates such tension throughout the film and balances the before and after of what happens to Tilda Swinton's family and her character so well. I love the little hints of red throughout the after and how they just kind of appear on her clothes and on her hands and just these little hints of red and just kind of what it symbolizes. And then Tilda Swinton. How she balances the character of a mother who hates her life after having this child who's awful and horrible child to how after something that he does just ruins her life and she has to deal with the fact that she raised this child and what he did. And she just delivers, in my opinion, the best performance from a female actress. Or from
she didn't get nominated.
I know.
Yeah.
And that's why I already don't care about the Oscars.
Ditto.
Yeah.
To everything you just said, including the part about it being number four.
Really?
Nice.
Oh,
nice. Nice.
Oh wow. Wow. And you know, Tilda Swinton is just so amazing.
Really is.
And everything she, I just, what's the, that movie with Keanu Reeves?
Constantine.
Constantine was just on TV. Yes. We watched it. And she was amazing in
that. Yeah.
Hold on, but out. I'm not the only one who likes that movie.
Though. I like
no,
it.
No. That's
Like Constantine is one of the most underrated films out there. It's it's an amazing film. Yeah.
But I also really like John Constantine, so.
Oh, no, yeah.
I never read the comics, and I watched it when it came out, and then actually we did a commentary for it, because Trey was like, guys, we've got to do this film. It's great, and nobody remembers it. And so we did, and I hadn't seen it since since I watched it when it came out. But the whole commentary is us going, this is amazing. This is a great film.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Nobody remembers it.
I was all alone seeing it. Like, nobody wanted, Keanu Reeves. I'm like, no, dude, it's Constantine. I don't care who's in it.
Yeah.
He looks like he's doing a good job. I mean, other than the fact that he's not blonde. It looks pretty awesome. And it was, even though Shia LaBeouf is in it.
Shia LaBeouf is in it.
He died.
Yeah.
So.
Spoilers.
So okay. We actually saw that in a screening. And then we actually paid to see it with a Q&A with the director. And it was really cool because that's what made me love Francis Lawrence. But then he went and did I Am Legend, which...
I Am Legend is great until the studio mandated ending.
No, it's a good film.
The
whole
until
movie
the ending.
Is horrible.
I don't think the effects are that great. Yeah. I don't like the creatures.
Yeah.
I'll give you that. But I like it except for the ending.
I like all
and then the original ending, I think, makes a good film.
All the Will Smiths, he does a lot of stuff on his own. And, he's got a lot going on when it's just him and the dog. And that's all awesome.
Yeah.
But then, the creature is just kind of it looks like they escaped from a cartoon.
See,
I could give you that, actually.
This is my problem with I Am Legend. A, you just called them creatures. They should have been fucking vampires. You know what I mean? Two, it's an adaptation of a book that I really, really love. And I understand, hey, you're going to interpret it the way you want to for film, but you can't go against the fucking theme of the damn book.
Right.
Which they did. They completely went against
the
theme.
They did because of the ending that was forced upon them from the studio. If you watch the original ending, the ending is in line with the theme of the book and the earlier I Am Legend movies, Omega Man movies.
Have you seen
the original ending?
I did. Okay. I did see it again on DVD just to see the shitty fucking ending. But
you're wrong.
But again, Will Smith was awesome. If they would have just done it, the thing is they fucked it enough where in 10 years, you can do HBO miniseries adaptation of it. It'll be amazing.
Well, hey, I've said before the best part of I Am Legend was seeing the prologue to Dark Knight. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I remember that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then seeing
the billboard in the Times Square scene of the Batman Superman movie.
Yeah.
Remember that? There's like a little Easter egg. There's a billboard in Times Square.
Yeah. When he's hunting the deer.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, hey, in the future.
Yeah exactly. Yeah.
Before we all die, you'll get to see Batman versus Superman.
Yeah. Well, maybe they didn't see it because if the billboard was still up, that means that the Earth ended.
That would suck.
And Will Smith is like, fuck, I'll never see that movie. That's why he was really upset. But yeah, so that's both your number fours. I need to talk about Kevin. I need to talk about seeing that movie soon.
Yes. I do too. I haven't seen it. You guys might call me a pretentious douchebag, although I don't think you can if you like Tree of Life. But I'm going to put King's Speech as number four. Because with the exception of some of the camera angles, I really, really liked King's Speech.
Wait, the King's Speech? 2011?
Yeah. They came out in 2010.
What, 11? No.
That was
It won Best Picture for 2010. Yeah.
Was it early 2011, though?
Yeah, that's what I thought it was. I know it won for last year, for 2010. But I thought it came out in January.
No.
It came out in December.
Right at the end. They're like, let's ride Christmas.
Yeah. I could have sworn I just looked it up and it came out in January.
Did you look it up on Wiki? Because it might be wrong.
And then limited release.
Maybe. I guess so.
Yeah.
Maybe. Well, okay.
Because they have to have a 2010 release.
Yeah. Yeah. It had to have been released before January 1st of 2011.
To qualify for the 2011 Oscars.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So it came out. It wouldn't qualify for 2011.
Okay.
The release date on IMDb is December 24th, 2010.
See?
Okay. I looked at, I think it was the wiki. I think I looked at the wiki.
She actually, Jenny, what was it going to call you, Jennifer? I was going to call you Jennifer from the block. Jenny from the block.
I looked it on a different website, and it actually said April of 2011. I was like, wait, did King's Speech
really
come
out in April? That's
for damn sure. I know. I was like, that's not right.
Well, give me a chance. Swap a movie.
Okay. I got like six honorable mentions here. Planet of the Apes, we already talked about. I might put Dragon Tattoo on there, I think.
Okay.
Awesome.
Okay.
Honorable mention.
I mean... Yeah. Fincher is Fincher, and Fincher's going to do his Fincher thing, and either you like the Fincher thing or you don't. I do.
Yeah.
And Dragon Tattoo is very definitely, Fincher. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great expression of it. I haven't seen the original, so...
I tried...
Full disclosure there, but I like... And Rooney Mara is amazing. Oh.
Yeah,
absolutely amazing.
Really good. I haven't seen the original either or read the book, so I really liked it, actually. I don't know if that changed if people read the book, if they didn't like it. I'm not sure.
I read the book and I still... I read the book after I saw the movie, but...
Okay.
The only thing that was like I found really distracting was the fact that everybody in the movie has a proper Norwegian accent except for Daniel Craig, who just has his British accent, but he's supposed to be Norwegian. I don't know about anybody else, but that was continually distracting for me throughout the whole movie.
It didn't bother me.
Yeah, it didn't bother you guys? Me, no.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm alone in my principles. But it was just the fact, like, if everybody had a British accent, then you could just kind of, like, adjust in your brain. You calibrate. But it was the fact that everybody else was doing, especially Rooney Mara, was doing a solid accent. And he was just kind of doing his James Bond thing. And I was like,
The thing that I always equated to is I had an acting teacher and we were talking about like DiCaprio doing an accent or something like that for like Blood Diamond. And the thing is, at the end of the day, if it's good acting, you forget that if it's good acting and it's a good movie, you forget that halfway through.
Yeah.
And you accept it. And I feel like if you're going to do a bad accent, then don't do it. It's kind of like Brad Pitt. He couldn't do an Irish accent for Snatch.
Right.
So he just went with, hey, I will make it so you can't understand what I'm saying. And you kind of make your own. And actually, that was great. And it was a good movie, and it was well acted. And I forgot about it.
What was the movie he did where he played an Irish,
the IRA guy?
Devil's Own.
Yeah. Did he have a...
I don't remember, because it's been a long time since I've seen that, but he had a good accent for that one. Yeah.
So, and also with Daniel Craig, I felt like, I understand. Like, even Robin Wright Penn had a Norwegian accent too.
Yeah.
And, But
Robin Wright.
Robin Wright, sorry. And I'm sure he tried it, and he's like, oh, it's horrible. Let me just do my...
I would imagine that's probably like they got a week into it, and Fincher had to be like, it's not working, dude. Yeah. It's just not working.
It's kind of like...
I'm sure that happens all the time.
Like in Valkyrie, I went to see Q&A with Christopher McQuarrie. And he talked about how when they first started rehearsing, Tom Cruise had a full-on German accent. And that they did like test footage for the costumes and stuff, and he did like a scene with it where he did the German accent. And he's like Bryan Singer was like, no, just do American. Because people start going, oh, it's just Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is too famous to be doing an accent. That's what it turned down to.
Because I don't know, but Tom Cruise is also like, yeah, Tom Cruise is fucking crazy, and there's no dispute that. But Tom Cruise is also really, really damn good.
Yeah.
And there's maybe you would need the kind of like full on makeup job that he has in Tropic Thunder for him to get away doing a character like that.
I think so.
I guess
I don't know,
but he is good.
Maybe he is good. I'm certainly not going to far and away Bryan Singer on it.
Was before he was too famous to do an accent.
Far and Away was before that. Before he was too famous,
he could still do it.
I was like, I'll do it. Yeah.
Speaking of Tom Cruise, I totally forgot to put probably what should be on this list, which is MI4. So that's what I'm going to do. Fuck Dragon Tattoo. MI4 goes on my list.
So
you're just going to just halfway through your... You just talked about Girl with the
Dragon Tattoo. I'm just going to throw out my whole list right now.
Yeah. Well, it's on a napkin anyway, so... Okay. I am Mission Impossible 4. I loved the crap out of. I think it's okay.
I can get behind
film.
That. Like, yeah. Because that's way more fun than Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
That's true.
Yeah. You liked it better?
Yeah. Well, they're both, as far as I'm concerned, both of the Dragon Tattoo movies are C's. They're both okay. That was all right. Whatever. I mean, Fincher made his look a little bit cooler, but his is slower than the Swedish one. So they both have their pluses and minuses.
I didn't see any. I didn't read the books. I didn't see the movies. I saw Fincher's first, and then I tried to see the Norwegian one, and I had to stop it because it was like watching like a TV.
That's exactly
TV
what
movie.
It felt like,
isn't it? Well, it's Swedish and Norwegian are two different things, aren't they?
Whatever, Norwegian, whatever.
Anyway, well, but they have
say Scandinavian and cover your
on
base.
Netflix. Yeah. They just put the extended. The extended versions of all of them. Did you see that?
No.
Where it's like six episodes of it. Because the first one was released in theaters, but then Girl Who Plays With Fire and Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest were essentially TV movies.
Oh, wow.
So it's like a six-part version of the whole trilogy
now.
Oh,
wow. And it's just the whole thing from straight square one.
You guys could do it after you do Lord of the Rings.
32 hours.
Yeah.
You're changing yours to...
I'm changing mine to Mission Impossible 4.
We won't go in depth to it, but it was good.
Yeah. Very, very good.
I think it definitely helped that we saw the Dark Knight Rises prologue beforehand. Yeah. That just got me even more pumped for MI4.
I didn't actually, but MI4 is the only movie this year that I've seen in the theater twice, as a matter of fact. Mm. So,
Was one of them on IMAX?
No, actually.
Mm-hmm. You know what? It's fun because you wouldn't think it was, but he filmed the scene.
Dubai scene?
Yeah, Dubai
the
scene.
Tower scene?
In IMAX. So when the camera pans, goes over his shoulder and you see all of Dubai.
Yeah.
It's in full IMAX, 70mm. And it gives you definitely like grip your seat.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's definitely.
I was in the second row. I felt like I was going to fall.
Yeah.
Your brain just, you know. There's the lizard brain at the bottom of all the human brain, you know, there's the fight or flight, you know, at the bottom of everything of you being smart. Underneath all of that is the fight or flight, and your brain just going, get out.
You know what? I watched the making of on HBO, and I thought, well, most of that had to be CGI, especially when he jumped out. And then you see the making of and like Tom Cruise, like they literally took off a window.
Yeah.
So he could stand up to the and I'm like, no.
Yeah.
And then when he ran out
really
and jumped,
him.
He really jumped. Like,
it's
literally
really him.
Well, I remember they had that picture like a year before the movie came out of him standing on the needle. I'm like, no, Tom Cruise.
Literally, like they opened up a window and he literally ran and jumped out. And I'm like, that is balls. Just forget about good acting. Just the fact that they're like, okay, Tom, in this scene, you're going to just. I know it's a really tall building, okay? We get that.
Well, I don't think it's jump like that. Out. I think it was, he's like, no, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. You're right.
Him going up to Tom, he's like, no, I'm going to jump out this window.
And I'm sure there was a conversation of it's like, well, you know, some insurance agents going, well, it's Tom Cruise. We can't have him actually up there all the 150 stories or whatever it is. And Tom Cruise or somebody going, you know what? After 10, it doesn't really matter. So let's just put him up there. It doesn't matter whether it's 100 stories or 105. Let's just
call it 10 and then we'll call it even.
Well, do you want to be the guy that tells Tom Cruise no?
Right.
You wouldn't want to see him very upset.
Whoa, what, does he turn into the Hulk?
Yeah. He does. He hulks out. So where are we at now? Are we 3, 4?
Wait, so that was
we're
starting three. That was my number four. Okay. Yeah. So
good choice.
Number three.
My number three was The Muppets. So
nice.
Ooh, all right then. So my number three is Take Shelter.
You son of a bitch.
That's my number three.
All right. Well, at least we're in the same number. So let's talk about it. Anybody else's list?
It was honorable mention.
Didn't see it.
Okay.
I haven't seen it yet either.
Take Shelter, again, it's one of those movies where, stop me if I'm wrong, but it's, again, it's a really kind of like still movie. Mm-hmm. It's what I like about it. And no frills, not a lot of CGI. I mean, CGI was done really, really well, the little bit that there is in the movie. But it's more about the acting. If the actors weren't selling what you're feeling and the things that he's seeing, you wouldn't believe it. And Michael Shannon is amazing.
Yes. And, I mean, Nichols' direction, because this is for a movie that's not a horror movie, it's got some pretty scary scenes in it.
Yeah.
Where they're not just throwing. It's just atmosphere, and it's the actors selling how creepy the scene. I mean, the scene in the kitchen where his wife is looking at him is just absolutely terrifying. But, yeah, Michael Shannon is, in my opinion, probably the second best male performance of the year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he is so, so good in this.
Wait, number one being Michael Fassbender. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Michael Shannon, who, by the way, I just rewatched Groundhog Day for the first time in a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's the guy.
Michael
yeah.
Shannon is the newlywed groom in it.
Where they go to the ones who get WrestleMania tickets.
Yes.
Really?
The WrestleMania, yes.
Oh my God, I gotta watch that again.
I watched it like a week or 2 weeks ago, and there he was, and it blew my fucking mind. It was like, holy, that's
awesome.
Michael Shannon in 1993 or whatever it is.
Yeah, and a happy Michael Shannon.
Very happy. Yeah, Michael Shannon before he figured out his old like creepy thing.
Yeah.
Surly.
Yeah, his surly creepiness.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome.
And he's amazing in this, and so is Jessica Chastain.
Yes, another good performance by her.
This last year was her year, dude. She had a bunch of stuff that was amazing, and everybody, the guy that played his friend, his coworker, the guy from
Shea Wigman.
Yeah, he was amazing. All supporting cast was amazing. My favorite scene is, well, my favorite little moment is when he, besides the end, is when his mom asked him, she asked, "Are you okay?" And there's like a 5 Mississippi where he's just like kind of thinking. And you could see him thinking like, I want to say no.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, okay. And it's amazing. Like that moment of acting, I really enjoyed it. And it's
well,
really
I mean, he takes you along on that ride and you're like, isn't he? And like when you see the scenes where he's breaking down and losing, you're like, if he's fucking crazy, I'm going to feel so bad for this guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he just carries the film along nicely. And then the film just knocks you in the gut afterwards and you go, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those movies where, I do this sometimes. Like I'll post on Facebook or Twitter. I just saw this and somebody will say, oh, how was it? It's one. If I have to take 3 days to tell you how it was, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Like if I have to digest it for 3 days, and that's how long it took for this. Like I knew coming out, I liked it. But I didn't know how much until like I just let it digest and it was pretty amazing. Jenny, what are you doing?
I'm moving in my chair. I'm sorry. I apologize.
I thought you
Can
were
you
hungry.
Hear that?
I thought you were hungry. but what else? What else? The cinematography was amazing. The guy they use is
the music.
Music.
The music and some of those scenes. The scene where they're in the shelter and just the way the music builds up with the act. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Gets the hair on the back of my neck standing.
Yeah. That's my number three, and you're number three.
Yep.
Nice.
Adam.
Alrighty. I still haven't seen it, and I feel bad about that.
It just came. It's on Blu-ray now. It just came out this week.
Sweet. All right. Yes. Well, I know what I'm doing tonight. My number three was Midnight in Paris.
Okay.
Nice.
Was Source Code 2011, or was that 2010?
It was
2011.
Yeah, it was like spring.
Source Code. Honorable mention.
Yeah. Another really fantastic science fiction film. Really like a simple... A simple setup of the rules of like, okay, it's the magic bean, a term that we use on Down in Front that comes from somewhere, I forget where, but you know, when you're telling a story, especially like a science fiction or fantasy, you get the magic bean, which is like the one thing that you get to change about the universe and don't have to explain. It's like your one freebie card. Okay, we have transporters or hyperdrive or laser swords or whatever it is, and like that's it. And so tell your story based off of that, but that's the only thing you get to change.
So the magic bean of source code is the, you know, the machine that sends them back in time or whatever actually happens. And it's just like, okay, here's the very simple, the magic bean of this is what this thing does, and here's the story that grows out of it. And it's, you know, this sort of Groundhog Day thing, but, you know, suspense thing, but also, you know, this philosophical idea of, you know, seizing the day and you know, not letting life pass you by, and just really great, very simple science fiction, which I love, and yeah, new and different science fiction. It's not, you know, Transformers, where it's just the same crap, or War of the Worlds, or the same crap over and over again. Jake Gyllenhaal. I really like Jake Gyllenhaal. I love, and now I'm totally blanking on her name.
Michelle Monaghan.
Michelle Monaghan is what it does.
Yeah.
She's gorgeous and amazing. Just really love the hell out of it. And I was a guy that wasn't a huge fan of Moon personally, his first movie, but I love Source Code quite a bit. So yeah.
I'm a fan of both Moon and Source Code. Source Code was good because it wasn't quite time travel, which I love time travel.
Yeah, it was doing a time travel thing, but it was putting a different spin on it. Yeah. The ending is kind of like, well, wait a second, that doesn't actually fit. And I get that, and I'm kind of on board with that idea, but
it was well done enough that where you're
well
like,
done enough where it's like, okay, fine, sure, all right. Whereas, like, the last 5% of that movie, I'm not going to let that ruin the 95% of the movie that I really, really love. Yeah. So, and that was actually a movie that I remember distinctly. That was the first movie in a very long time where I knew absolutely nothing about it going in. You guys were going to go see it. I don't know if you were there with us, Kevin, or not.
I don't think I was there.
But Ricardo, you were like, yeah, we're going to go see this movie when it comes. And I knew nothing, but I went, and I walked out, and I was like, that was not wasted money. Most of the time when I go to the theater these days, I feel like I've wasted my money. But coming out of Source Code, I was like, that was money well spent.
Yeah. And it was a nice little Scott Bakula voice cameo.
Yes, indeed.
But yeah. Oh, again, I forgot to mention, you were mentioning about the 5% that you didn't like, but the only thing I didn't like, from Planet of the Apes was the fact that he talked at the end to James Franco.
Really? You don't like that?
Yeah, no, because I mean, it would have been amazing if the only thing he had said was no.
Yeah, I can see that.
And then he just, you know, and then if they could have even had that moment at the end, but without talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. But actually, hearing a Q&A with the writers of that movie.
Source Code or Apes?
Apes.
Okay.
I needed to say a little bit about it. Sorry.
No worries.
There was a scene where they filmed the original ending. James Franco died.
Really?
Yeah, and then they went back and they reshot the ending.
Was it? Did they change it because of a test screening or just because?
Yeah, well, they just played it for themselves and they're like, it's not working.
Yeah.
The Brian Cox was going to shoot the ape and James Franco. Oh no!
the slow motion.
Yeah,
dive
slow motion
in front
dive.
Of.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. That's basically it. Yeah.
Right.
And they don't like it so. But Source Code again.
Source Code is great.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Just the end, but whatever.
Yeah.
And all the supporting actors again. Jeffrey Wright, he's great.
I wasn't actually a huge fan of Jeffrey Wright's performance in that. I felt a little like phony. Where everybody else felt very, very real, he felt a little phony to me. But
you're just a dick, you just didn't like him.
You're just gonna be the bad guy.
I just don't like cripples. Okay, that's all there is to it.
No, I was saying that was the direction they gave him. You're the bad guy. That's all they gave him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
go with it. Yeah. So what are we at? Two?
My number two was Shame.
Damn it.
Sorry.
That's my number two.
That's why I wanted to go first.
We should have picked straws for this.
It was, we should have. Shame was on my list, and then I had to change it for my current number two.
Okay.
But I'll explain why. But Shame, fucking A, man.
Yeah.
It was really good.
It's a great movie, but again, it comes back to, do I really want to sit down and watch Shame right now?
See, yeah. I do, but probably because Michael Fassbender's naked in most of it. That's probably the only reason. So
you
I understand.
Sick fuck.
So I understand where you're coming from. But yeah, I loved it. I thought he was fantastic. I think he's a great actor anyways, and this just, I hadn't seen him that serious, I guess. I don't know. I hadn't seen him in such a deep role, and he just brought. And he just brought.
I almost
like,
made
a lot
it.
To
I
it.
Almost made it without giggling. I couldn't help it.
But yeah. So I thought. I don't know. I really liked it. I would probably go see it again. I need to go see it again actually, because I feel like there were some things that I was like kind of. I was kind of tired when I saw it too. So yeah. I don't know. But
Did you put it on your list?
It's my number two.
You're number two. Okay. Isn't this movie, again, this is one of those movies where there's less said. It's kind of like the Ryan Gosling Drive thing where it's like there's not a lot of said, but definitely you could, especially in this movie. I'd say Michael Fassbender or Fassbender?
Oh, yeah. What
Fassbender,
is it?
Right?
Fassbender.
I thought it was Fassbender. That's what I've always heard.
Okay.
He's English. So.
Yeah. So he did a way better job than Ryan Gosling.
So it's probably Left Bender.
Yes.
Yeah. Slow Bender. So yeah, no, he, because there's so much going on and you see it, like you, what you see on screen is him thinking,
yeah,
without him saying anything.
The scene of him in the bar watching the girl, oh, I feel like he's like a shark and he's just hunting his prey, and you can just see every thought of him as a character and not as an actor going, I'm staring at this girl and I gotta be thinking. It's just, he's just imagining himself having sex with her later in the evening. And just the way Steve McQueen directs this film. I mean, you talk about the movie not being, not saying anything. If you look at his previous film, Hunger, which everybody goes, oh, I think it's better. And he needed to learn how to like trim his scenes and pace the film better. And this film just captures everything. I mean, yeah, there's a lot that isn't said, but the pacing is so well done. And the way he frames shots and his compositions are just terrific. And I cannot wait to see what he does next, because he... I think he's finally gotten a handle on his talent and his ability as a director, and I just want to see where he goes with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Is he doing another movie with Michael?
Yeah.
Yep.
I think he only, they're only going
to
work
with him. Yeah, he only wants to work with Michael.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Wow, he's full on embracing that like director that works with an actor over and over again thing. Most people are like, after their third movie, like, Bruce, I can't cast you again. I'm sorry. I got to work with somebody else. But he's totally like, nope, just Fassbender. Fassbender all the way down.
Fassbender has become his muse, I think. So,
and
is it Fassbender or is it Fassbender's penis that's become his muse?
Well, he has been naked in both movies. So,
now you got to see Hunger. See?
I know, I haven't seen that one.
No, you're gonna get turned off by Michael Fassbender. I'm pretty sure.
Really?
Yeah. It's a hunger strike.
Yeah, he's like 90 pounds in it.
Oh, gross.
But my
so that's
my
favorite... like what, 40 pounds of cock?
Yeah. 40 pounds of cock, some skin, some bone, and his head.
Yeah. That was like a triple entendre.
Yeah, it was.
That's what I was going for.
My favorite scene in Shame was the scene where it's in the train. One of the first scenes in the movie was it's just like, it's like goes back. It's like literally if you film the scene with dialogue, but then you're like, okay, now this one just do it in your head.
Yeah.
And like there's like a whole give and take, and they keep cutting to her. It's a girl on the subway, and then Michael Fassbender is just looking at her, and there's a whole interchange of looks, and at one point she blushes. She literally blushes. She did an amazing job, and she only has two little parts, and she doesn't get enough credit because she was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the girls in this movie.
Carrie Mulligan is so good.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I heard the singing scene was done one take, and that was he hadn't heard her sing, and it was shot with three cameras. And so her singing and his reaction are one, so that one take. And it's that again, a difference, another scene which is amazing. And I just can't stop talking about.
Yeah.
And the whole movie's amazing.
It is.
The running scene was really good. Yeah.
Just like, was this that guy one shoots
take?
A guy.
That was one take. Yeah. That was one take. Yeah.
It's one long take of Michael Fassbender running. Just running, and it's just profile, and it doesn't change, just a shot. And it's amazing. It's amazing what like they're telling you about the character. There's a ton of things going on, I feel, and it's really well done.
And upon what Adam was saying earlier, how you believe it's a really good movie, but it's not a movie that you can actually watch again. I felt like I had the wind knocked out of me when I left the movie theater. I took about 40 minutes to get back to my car, and I had to get to work quickly. And I thought about the movie for a week, and I had to go see it again because I just couldn't stop thinking about it. And it's another movie that I will probably buy because I just keep thinking about it, and I've seen it twice now. And it is a hard movie. And like I said, I saw it a second time, and it knocked the wind out of me again. And I know it's going to do it to me, but I'm going to keep watching it because I keep getting inspired by the craft.
It's a great movie, and I do really appreciate it. And it is an honorable mention. But yeah, it's just really devastating. And I saw it by myself. I didn't go. I remember the first time I went and saw it was, I was asking you if I should go to an 11 o'clock showing of Shame by myself.
No.
And I didn't do that, fortunately.
Yeah, that's good.
I saw it like during the middle of the day, I think.
That's good. Because you need time to just reflect on life afterwards.
Yeah. And it's really good.
And you know, too, also as just in filmmaking, you know, like, well, you know, there's a couple of us, I think all of us here are filmmakers, except Jenny, she's a painter.
I'm a huge filmmaker,
guys. But it also applies to that. Just the fact that I feel like for me, like filmmaking, I haven't found my voice as a filmmaker. Like I haven't found like what like I feel like that guy has a handle on what his strengths are and what are his weaknesses.
Steve McQueen?
Yeah, Steve McQueen. And I feel like I haven't found out. I still don't have all my strengths. I have all my weaknesses. I know what I'm weak at. but
that's half the battle.
Yeah. And the more I do, the more I realize what I'm not good at. But it's just that guy. That guy knows exactly what he's good at. And I same thing with painting. I feel like you have to just figure out like, oh, I'm not this type of painter.
You gotta try every medium. Yeah. Just like what you got to try every genre.
You have to figure out what your style is, and you have to figure out what story is in you that you have to tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's why it was just like that movie. It's like a film school.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Anyway, that should have been in my list because it's amazing, but I didn't put it in there.
Well, that's why I did.
It seems like you're feeling a little bit of shame about that.
I am. I'm a little bit ashamed.
Hey. And I'm really annoyed that he wasn't acknowledged.
I know. Nobody was. Cinematography, her.
Oh, no, yeah.
Acting.
I think it was NC-17 keeping the old focus.
Yeah, I think so,
exactly.
Too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was at an Academy screening the other day, and I was like, oh, it all makes sense now. I looked at the audience and I understand. I understand why what gets nominated gets nominated.
Yeah.
Because
I
was the youngest person there by like 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was nominated for a Golden Globe, though, right?
Yeah, he was.
Okay. So that's something,
but
at least.
They're all foreign, those guys.
Yeah.
Those guys.
The Golden Globes is the Hollywood foreign press. Yeah.
Okay.
So there's no Americans.
So, I mean, like the foreigners, they love male penis.
Like
but the foreign press is notorious for being bought out, aren't they? I mean,
I think so.
That's
what I've heard about the Golden Globes, is that it's, you know, it's the Hollywood foreign press that have somehow made themselves into this, you know, the gatekeepers, but it's totally corrupt.
Yeah.
And I don't, that's just what I've heard, so I don't have anything to back that up with, but.
It's like Chicago in the 40s.
Yeah. or Washington, D.C. in the 21st century.
Yeah.
And Harvey Keitel is Al Capone.
Yeah, exactly. So you're number two.
My number two.
Your number two.
But all right.
Your number two.
Yeah,
so it's your number two.
It should have been my number two. But
in Kevin's
but
number
what is
two.
Your number
oh,
two?
What
is your number
that's
two?
That's right. It's my turn, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
God, I'm confused. I'm sorry, guys. It was
this
like
is why I wanted to draw straws.
Who's on first? No, you're.
Let's start over.
You are on first.
You guys should get like a little dealer chip and just, you know, pass it around.
Yeah. Who has the ball?
We really just need it for Ricardo because he's the only one who loses track.
Sorry, I get so involved. Okay, my number two is Moneyball.
Yeah.
Honorable mention.
Honorable mention.
All right.
Here we go. I'll explain. I haven't watched, for the exception of a very few movies, baseball movies for the most part don't suck. Like, it's hard to make a crappy baseball movie.
I love baseball movies.
Baseball
I
movies are amazing.
I love them.
I like baseball movies more than I like baseball.
Yeah, but you like baseball, Jenny.
I do
you?
Like baseball.
So your opinion is invalid.
All right.
No, I'm totally.
And you know what? The reason I like baseball is because of baseball movies. And I'm being fucking honest. Like, in baseball, there's teams I hate. But for the most part, yeah, I like the Dodgers because I'm from LA. But there's only teams I hate. That's what I'm passionate about. Teams I hate.
You're much more passionate about what you hate in life.
Yeah.
Right. This I've learned.
In everything.
Yeah. Yes. Knowing you for however many years I've known you at this point. Moneyball is actually my number one. I just saw it on Saturday as part of this Best Picture Showcase. And I loved the crap out of it. I think, in my opinion, it is one of the best science fiction films ever made. And, okay, I don't give a crap about baseball or organized sports in any way, shape, or form either. I've never cared about baseball. But I'm a nerd, so I love economics and statistics and, like, the science of figuring things out as well. I'm all aboard that. And this movie is that. And it's so brilliantly and wonderfully that. And it just – it lays it out of, like – I'm very, like, skeptical and, personally, I'm all about, like, skepticism and rationality and how do you know – what is the truth and how do you know what the truth is and how can you be sure like you're doing the right thing? Like, how do you know you have the right answer? Don't just say you have the right answer. How do you know? How can you have any kind of certainty as to what the right answer is? And that's what this movie is about. And there's one scene in it that's amazing between Brad Pitt and like the head scout guy, because we as human beings, and especially we as people who love films and a lot of filmmakers, are very romantic people about the magic of the world. And magic is very important. But at the end of the day, magic isn't real. And as adult human beings, we should understand that. But there's a lot of people out there that either have a vested interest in believing in their own magic or whatever. And the scene between Brad Pitt and the head scout where the head scout is saying, well, like, you got your fancy number system thing going on, and that's just crazy or whatever. I've been a scout for 30-odd years, and, you know, it's a thing you can't explain. It's a thing you can't understand. It's just, it's there, but I have it because I have the experience, and, you know, your numbers will never have that. And Brad Pitt, in response, says, you don't know. You think you know. You tell these kids when you promise them the world that you know, and you tell their parents that you know, but you don't actually know. And from like a skeptical, rational, scientific point of view, which is what I'm all about, it is the most amazing exchange in a mainstream modern film that I have ever seen. And that's why I say I think it's one of the best science fiction films ever made, because science fiction, when it's done right, when there's an idea to it, it's that. That's the, you know, science fiction is about, this is how we interact with the world and how we can understand it and how we can be better at living in the world. And that scene is quintessentially like, okay, this is how we are going to understand the world better and do better by it. And just loved the crap out of it. My number one, easily one of my favorite films of all time.
Wow.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
So, I know nobody else is going to sell it that hard, but I loved, like, and it's such it's so tragic. It's, you know, you're talking about, you know, walking out of it and you're floored. I was floored walking out of Moneyball, because it's this whole story about, okay, let's figure out how to do this right and win as a result. And let's find the real way to win and win at life. And they figure it out. And then personally, Brad Pitt's story, you know, not to ruin it, but he doesn't. And it doesn't even like dramatize that part of it. It shows you the end of the story. You think he's going to, and then in a title card at the very end, no, turns out not. And it just scooped my heart out with a spoon and just laid it on the floor for me. So Moneyball is my number one, personally, and I love the crap out of it.
And again, well, also, to go against your argument.
Okay. No, to tell you why you are wrong.
No. And I agree with most of what you said. I totally agree. But also, again, to every equation, there's the human factor, which is to me, like, again, I love baseball, but I like baseball, but I love NASCAR. Let's not kid ourselves. I'm a NASCAR guy.
We should get into my opinion on NASCAR.
Okay. Really? Forget it. I genuinely love NASCAR.
Have you seen the license plate?
Oh, yeah.
I have. I've never seen Ricardo's car, actually.
Have you not worn like your Dale Earnhardt Jr. hat before?
No, I haven't. Well, he changed teams and I haven't gotten a new hat. Sorry. But anyway.
That's just a whole other ethical dilemma.
Yeah, okay. We'll talk about that later. But so what I'm saying is that you put all these numbers and all these statistics, but at the end of the day, it's a human being out there. It's, you know, and there's a lot to be said about instinct and, you know what I mean? Like the fact that.
Yeah, no, I don't agree.
Does anybody else feel like that scene in Jurassic Park where John Hamm and Ian Malcolm are arguing about life finding a way?
Yeah. Well, that scene, I love Jurassic Park, and Jurassic Park is definitely on my list of greatest movies of all time. But at the end of the day, Jurassic Park thematically is an anti-science movie because of the scene that they have at lunch where Ian Malcolm is like, you know, you can't figure this out. You just can't. And I'm sorry, as somebody who really values science, who considers themselves a very scientific person and the value of science to us as a species, as humanity, that bothers me on a deep level. Like the point of Jurassic Park at the end of the day is no, don't, because you can't figure it out. And I don't agree with that.
Well, it's just funny, like all these science fiction movies that Michael Crichton wrote, but then it's like, oh, well, he also didn't believe in global warming.
Yeah.
And he's saying that science can't solve everything. And they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park is a great movie, but Michael Crichton had his issues.
Yeah.
But, as a science fiction author.
But anyway, back to Moneyball.
Yes.
Moneyball was amazing. Let's talk about Moneyball again. it was really great. It was really well written. And
that's
actually
the one I'm kind of hoping wins best screenplay, Moneyball.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Aaron Sorkin fan.
Yeah. And it was also Steve Zaillian, I think, right?
Yeah. Sorkin and Zaillian. Mm-hmm.
And also, not only that, but I feel like everything was top notch. I feel like the original director was Steven Soderbergh, and I love that guy. He was on my top five directors.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah, and that's why he kind of left, was because he wanted to make a very different movie.
He wanted to do Haywire and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
He wanted to do Steve Zaillian's script, but then Sorkin came in and fixed it. And what I hear is that his take on it was completely different. And Bennett was perfect for this movie.
He really was.
Because he... it was just really well done, really simple. It wasn't a lot of fancy shots. And the cinematography was amazing.
Like, the score.
The score was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Who did the score?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know the cinematography.
If only we had some sort of iPad-like device in front of us.
Oh, yeah, I could look that up.
The cinematography was the guy, Wally... is it
Pfister?
Pfister, yep. The Dark Knight guy. And it was
Nolan's,
really well...
Nolan's DP.
Yeah, no, Christopher Nolan's DP. And he was amazing. This is one of the only movies that he's kind of gone out of the Nolan camp. He usually only does Christopher Nolan movies. And it was really well done. And the acting, Jonah Hill kind of really surprised me.
Okay.
The fact that
here's the thing. I think Jonah Hill does a fine performance. I just don't think there's enough material that I see where he gets a nomination.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree
not.
With you. I agree with you.
He does a perfectly fine job. He does a great job.
I think he got nominated. Like, I think he got nominated because it was out of his ballpark. Mm-hmm. Pun intended.
I think he got nominated because they couldn't give Brad Pitt another nomination, or they felt bad about it, but they really wanted to give somebody from Moneyball a nomination, they give it to Jonah Hill instead of Brad Pitt.
Well, Brad Pitt, isn't he nominated?
He's nominated for
Best Actor.
For Tree of Life.
No,
it's for Moneyball.
Yeah. Is it for Moneyball?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Then that totally shoots my theory.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind.
The theory's horrible.
But we found out what was true and what wasn't, and that's the important part.
on all these movies in those lists, I felt like the supporting actors were amazing. The cameo by Spike Jonze, I don't like that character. Automatically. Why? And I love Spike Jonze, but I don't like that guy. I'm like, shut up. Who? Why did you get her a cell phone?
Where's his
Spike camera? Jonze was
he's the
stepdad.
The new wife. Yeah. Okay. new wife. Yeah. New husband.
The new wife. Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone
really
did it.
Strange.
Yeah. Robin Wright's new husband. Yeah. His ex-wife's. Yes. Yeah.
And everybody's
smart.
A good job.
I promise.
Yeah. And at the end, I think that was like his Oscar moment. You know, at the end when they're driving. And that's when I think the cinematography is like off. Is the best part of it. Like, when, like, his face keeps going in and out of shadow and he's driving on the highway, it's the last shot of the movie. Mm-hmm. That was my favorite shot, I feel.
You know, I didn't even notice the cinematography at all.
I saw it, like, five times.
Okay. So. I mean that in the best possible way.
Oh, yeah. No,
I didn't
notice
a lot. I didn't notice really the craft of any of that movie because it was just... It did exactly what all of, directing, but every discipline of it should be, which is like, it's not...
It's subtle.
Yeah. It's not the director going, look at me direct, or the DP going, look at me like the scene. It's like, here's the story. Here's this real world and these people moving through it. Here's the story that unfolds from that.
And I think you said something really important where it's like, most movies, if they're really well done, you don't notice the thing.
Yes,
you don't notice
exactly.
The score. I don't know who did the score because it was so well done. It's just subtle.
Yeah, I mean, she said that, and I can't think of the score at all. I know that I was feeling emotions as I was watching it because it definitely made an impression.
It had a very Social Network feel to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also too, the only reason I all these things are come to mind is because I did see it like five times, and I had a chance to be like, oh, the cinematography is amazing, and this is amazing.
Sure. Sure.
So, but definitely, again, everything but very subtle, and even like Bennett Miller is his name.
Yeah.
Director. It's very, you can't give him credit. He couldn't get nominated for an Oscar because it's so simple. He did his job. He shut the fuck up, basically.
Yeah. And that's the terrible, like, necessary tragedy of this whole thing. It's like, if you're really doing your job, nobody's going to notice how good of a job you did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's what you, giving somebody an Oscar for acting is an oxymoron. Because if you're giving somebody an award for their great acting, they've already failed. Because their ultimate job is just to convince you that they're not acting in the first place. And just convincing you that they are this person living this life. And it's like that with any of the disciplines. Directing, DPing, writing, editing. It's like as soon as you notice it, and you notice it as its thing, editing or whatever it is, then it's already failed at its job.
Is it a Gordon Willis quote? Save your gasps?
I think it's Gordon Willis.
Interesting. I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah. So don't go out of your way to be showing off.
Yeah. But it's absolutely true.
Yeah. Damn, where are we at? Two? Was that two?
That was your number two and his number one.
Your number two, Kevin?
We already went over it with Shame.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks. I'm leaving. See ya.
Adam.
My number two is Martha Marcy May Marlene.
Ah,
honorable mention. Yes. It was up there.
Very good.
Yeah, that was a movie I really just... Is again in contrast to my saying I needed an uplifting movie.
Yes, you lied.
When it's scary, I don't care. Like a movie has all the permission in the world to just fuck with my head if it's going to scare me, because I like scary movies. And so this one totally takes the cake. It scares the shit out of me. It's creepy. I get lost in it. Amazing director. Amazing acting.
The writing is so good.
It's just so much fun to get lost in this movie, and it's really creepy, and I loved it.
I can't wait to see her in more stuff. I'm so happy that she's in like three movies this year.
She's the reason I'm looking forward to Silent House.
Yes.
Kind of the only reason, because I saw the Spanish one, and we'll see.
Yeah.
You have to thank the Olsen twins, because if they weren't famous, maybe she wouldn't have gotten into acting. And this is the gem of that family, I feel.
Oh, without a doubt.
Right?
The gem and the jewel. Or the gem and the crown of the Olsen family.
Of the Olsen family.
Elizabeth Olsen. She is quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And John Hawks?
John Hawks. Such a haunting performance.
John Hawks is good in everything. John Hawks wasn't a good
John
Hawks.
He's always been like in the back of my mind, though. He'd never like... I mean, I knew... I'd seen him in other things, but it was just like a...
He'd never terrified me.
Yeah, this movie was...
Even in his episode of The X-Files... He never terrified me as much as he does without doing it. Like, just being there in that stillness that you love so much, Ricardo.
I love my stillness.
He has the most terrifying stillness ever. It's ridiculous. Like, scarier than a psychopath with a mask hiding in the shadows, with, like, fully lit, just looking in the emptiness of his eyes, and, like, he will swallow your soul.
Mm-hmm. And he's not a big guy. He's just a scrawny guy, but you're absolutely terrified of him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like, I don't know what he's going to do next, but I don't want to be around to see it.
I want to watch it right now.
Let's watch it. All right. So that is your number two.
That is my number two.
Well done, sir.
My number two is Contagion.
Ooh.
Oh.
Good one. I love Contagion. I love Soderbergh, especially when he's doing, when he's doing his own thing. I don't know if this qualifies as his own thing, like the Good German kind of a thing, or whether this is more of a studio thing. But
I think this is more of a studio thing. I think Haywire was more of a...
I still haven't seen Haywire, but... oh, really? I've heard it's good. Okay.
She's not good.
She's not good.
Gotcha.
The rest of it's good.
Okay. Gotcha. I love Contagion because it was just a straight up... It's great science fiction in the sense that it's like... It's on the TV tropes, it would be called Next Sunday AD, just like... It's the future, but it's very, very near future, literally like Next Sunday AD kind of a thing. But it's just, here is this scenario, and here is how it would actually be. And it's what I love specifically about it, what made me love this movie more than anything else, is the way they treat the Jude Law character subplot to it. Because
I haven't seen it, so.
I haven't either.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yes. Oh. Sir, I love Soderbergh. I know. Well, there was two movies this year, and I picked the wrong one. I picked Haywire.
Yeah, you did.
Wait, but that was this year, when we're talking about last year.
It was like 4 months ago.
I totally.
When does it get on DVD?
It's on DVD.
It's already on DVD.
It's on now.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, too bad. I'm spoiling it for you. Because one of the things I hate more than anything in the world is conspiracy theorists and conspiracy theories and how much stupid bullshit nonsense they generate, and they don't make sense.
Whatever. One good thing about conspiracy theories is seeing what John Glenn punch him out when they tell him that.
Buzz Aldrin. That is a fantastic moment. But it's conspiracy theories and the crazy guy with the cardboard sign on the corner of the street saying the world is ending and the government is causing the world to end. That's a very tried and true trope of movies and television that pops up over and over and over again, because it's ironic on some sense that the crazy guy on the corner says the world's going to end, but he turns out to be right. Isn't that crazy? And like, maybe the first time that happened, it was like funny and ironic, but it's happened 10,000 times in movies and television since, and now it's just kind of an accepted thing. And in real life, that's totally bullshit. It's totally not the way the real world works. And Contagion sets you up with that stock character, this crazy Jude Law is a blogger, but he's a crazy conspiracy theory blogger, and he has the government is in on it, and the government engineered the virus, and they're in bed with the pharmaceutical companies to blah blah blah. But at the end, there's this great twist that he's just fucking crazy. He's just crazy, and that's all there is to it. And the actual movie is about the government people, the people who work for the government, really doing their God's honest, earnest best to save lives as best as they can.
And risking their own lives
and doing a good job. Not being perfect, but doing a damn good job in the face of really tough circumstances. And that's where the key drama of this film comes in. And the kind of the bullshit, lazy drama that a lot of other people would mine out of the crazy conspiracy guy being right, they play it straight where the crazy conspiracy guy is just crazy. And that's all there is to it. And as a guy who hates conspiracy theories with a fiery, fiery, burning passion, it was amazing for me to see that. I would go to the mat for this film for it.
So just like you can't argue with like really hardcore Christians, you know?
Yeah.
I would say you can't argue with conservatives.
But you can.
You can. But you could top them. And I'll tell you how it is. I stole this idea from Stand Up Comic, and it's amazing. It's an amazing theory, and it's amazing. So just watch. So you have, in this little scenario, you're going to play the conspiracy theorist.
Okay.
And then you tell me that you don't believe in the moon landing, okay? Just okay. like quickly, just go into it, blah, blah, blah.
Moon landing is fake because you can't see the stars in the photographs, and there's actually two shadows from the lunar module cast two separate shadows. And that's bullshit.
You believe in the moon? You fucking top them.
Do you read XKCD, a webcomic? He has a great strip where he's like, he loves to toy with conspiracy theorists by conflating and interweaving different conspiracy theories. So he's the example in the strip is like, the towers couldn't have come down from the jet fuel in the plane because the jet fuel doesn't burn hot enough for that to happen. And so the way he trolls them is like, yeah, but with the material that they make the chemtrails out of, I mean, who knows what stuff that burns at? And the conspiracy in the panel, the conspiracy theory is like, yeah, that's a good point.
The trick is to just top them. Just go.
Yeah. It's the same idea as what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's
like, dude, you believe in the moon? Like, hey, yeah. Barack Obama's doing this. You believe in Barack Obama? Yeah. Wait, with that,
you think Barack Obama is the actual president?
You think Barack Obama's real? but yeah, basically you got to go crazier. I hate conspiracy theorists who are like 9/11 was a conspiracy. I'm like, have you seen someone take down a hotel in Vegas when they're going to bring it down? It takes a team of like hundreds of people to bring down a building that's only 20 stories.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I will see Contagion.
You should. You must.
I'm ashamed that I haven't seen it.
Your conspiracy theorist rant made me think. Have you seen the movie Last Night, the Don McKellar movie, End of the World?
No,
movie?
I haven't.
It's really good. Yeah. I mean, the world, the entire movie is predicated on the fact that the world is actually ending. Tomorrow is the last day of the world, and there is a crazy woman running around just talking about, like, she's just counting down, and it's really funny.
Nice. Okay.
You might enjoy it. It's Don McKellar, Sandra Oh, lots of Canadian actors.
Is it a Canadian movie?
Yes.
Okay.
You're like, I'm not going to see it.
I don't know.
I will not be participating.
I don't think Canadians are real. So, have you ever seen a Canadian?
I haven't.
Good point.
Prove that they are Canadian?
I can't.
See? No. There you go.
Canada doesn't exist. sorry to all our Canadian listeners. okay, so where are we at? Where are we at now? Jenny?
By number one.
Joel, Jenny's falling asleep.
Wait, like, can I throw out a prediction? I have a feeling all four of us have the same number one.
Okay. I'll go with you.
I feel like that could be true.
Haha, joke's on you. I've got a tie.
Damn. What? Cheater.
All right. Okay. What's your number one?
All right. Recap. Number five was Midnight in Paris, 4 Bridesmaids, 3 The Muppets, 2 Shame, and my number one surprise face is Drive.
Oh. Wait, never mind. That's not my number one.
That's my number one.
That's my number one.
that's half of my number one.
Okay. It. So let's talk about fucking Drive. Did you see it?
Yes, I saw it.
It's not in your number one? What's wrong with you?
It's fine. It's in my pile of honorable mentions, but it's not my top five.
So tell us, Jenny, you start off. Why do you like this movie?
Ryan Gosling.
I like your simplified answer. It's like, Ryan Gosling?
Period.
She did the moon thing. She's like, you believe in the moon?
I love it. He's awesome. The soundtrack is awesome. The cinematography is awesome. The storyline's awesome. Everyone in it is awesome.
Tell us how you really feel, Jenny.
It's just plain and simple, one of my all-time favorite movies already. I need to buy it. Pretty much.
Ricardo already buy it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not mine.
So.
Well, yeah, but how long is that going to last? Hey. Forever.
That's up to you, isn't it?
I love everyone in it. I'm really upset that Albert Brooks didn't get nominated.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
Highway robbery.
Yeah. Yes, agreed. Albert Brooks, I'm sorry.
So, for the listeners, I know there's a lot of listeners who are going to go, that movie sucked. I just know it.
My girlfriend is among them.
So, and here's my. Remember when I talked about when I talked about Miami Vice? When I talked about Michael Mann being the great, my favorite director, I start off by cutting you off by saying the things that were bad with it.
Okay,
I'll start off with the things that are bad with Drive. Okay.
But she just said there's nothing bad.
Well, yeah. Clearly there's a lot of things bad.
All I got from Jenny was it's awesome.
Awesome. Everything was awesome. 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 Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that if they were doing the artwork after the fact, it'd be awesome sauce.
Yeah.
Jenny. Awesome Jenny from the List Film Podcast.
Yeah, I awesome think sauce. So.
One thing. He's, for the risk he's taking, he's got to be getting paid a lot of money. Why the fuck does he live in a shitty fucking apartment in, like, Silver Lake? Why? Why? He lives, like, and why does, there's a lot of things wrong with where they live, okay? They live in like, a Hispanic neighborhood, and why? But why would he be living there? He's got a sweet car. Where does he park it? There's no parking in Koreatown or wherever he's living at.
He's got a parking garage, remember?
Yeah.
He drives in, and he okay. sees the guy got beat up.
That's exactly. That's true. Okay, another thing is why, the movie's about nothing, really. The movie is about something, but it's really about nothing. Like, what? Why does he have to risk his life for this girl? And anyway, there's a lot of things bad with it, but again, it's my number one. I love this movie. I've been going through this, like, this 80s phase, and I just love the music. And this is a movie where everything is fucking apparent. There's no subtlety in this movie whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's why I love it.
I like Drive. I like it fine. But yeah, for me, it's a whole bunch of people going, look at me, make a movie, as opposed to just a story about people going through a world.
Yeah. It's kind of like Ryan Gosling bursting through a door and attacking you with a hammer.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And yeah. If you can picture that.
If that were a movie, then yes, that would be, yeah.
And the movies, and that's why I like it, because everything is like, hey, we're going to use every tool of filmmaking to make this movie cool, and it's a really well done movie. I enjoy it. The music is amazing, which really stands out. The cinematography clearly stands out, and but I do. There's some stuff that's very subtle that rewatching it a couple times, I'm like, oh, I didn't ever notice that. That wow, that's the subtle part of it. Like my favorite part of the movie, one of the many scenes, is the beginning, the chase scene. The opening, the introduction. Yeah, and if you notice, the whole chase is shot from inside the car. Mm-hmm. There's no shot that's outside the car, and that's so hard to do. That's really hard to do, and he managed to do that. And that's where it's subtle, because I didn't notice it the first time or the second time. It took me 3 times. So, wow. So there's stuff like that I really enjoy, and I got a lot out of it. So.
Nicholas Winding Refn was awesome.
Yeah. He was.
Yeah,
he's great.
And all I have to say is, I mean, I know they do throw everything with the kitchen sink at you, but sometimes, you know what? It feels good to be punched in the mouth, because you get the endorphins running. Wow.
We are just learning.
The stress
all
is going, and you're just really excited. You're like, let's do it again.
So now we know Kevin's sexual habits. He likes to get punched in the face.
Yes.
You're like Frank Moody.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week.
Our top 5 sexual deviancies.
Uh-huh. But even just, I like even just like the quiet moments with just him and Carey Mulligan. And I know jackasses in the theater were laughing at some of those scenes, but I just love how the two actors carry those scenes and just the chemistry between the two of them.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. You can tell exactly what they're feeling.
Yeah. And I know you're saying you don't know why, what his motivation is to do what he does, but it's because he does have a connection to her, even though he can't technically have her. That's why he's doing it.
No. Yeah. And
it's love.
And there's a lot of things.
The thing should have been on your romantic movie
compared
list.
To love.
It should have been. Yeah. And but yeah, Adam,
I think everything has pretty much been said about this movie. It's just, I mean, I think me, and Ricardo and Jenny. Wait, were you there, Jenny?
She wasn't there. It was
okay,
Michelle.
So, they looked
a lot alike.
Because I remember you were there with other people too. Yeah, I don't remember who else was there, but we saw that sneak screening of it, and as soon as it was over, I was like, wow, I want to watch it again.
Yeah, and I
Let's
couldn't.
Go.
Yeah,
for like 4 months. I was really bummed. I was really upset.
I tried really hard to get tickets for another screening, and they didn't screen it again.
It was just again that sucker punch just out of nowhere.
Yeah,
and I think it also helped that we hadn't seen a trailer, we hadn't seen anything.
I had seen
the opening scene.
Yeah, first scene is that awesome. Yeah, I want to see what's going on.
Yeah.
But, and Gosling is so good. That's the reason I got Savannah to go see with me, because Ryan Gosling's in it, so there's that.
Yeah. The ladies do love Ryan Gosling, don't they? Like, every woman I know on Facebook is posting Ryan Gosling all up and down it.
You heard about that. The people boycotting People magazine for having Bradley Cooper as sexiest man alive instead of
Ryan Gosling. I did not hear about that.
Standing outside wearing Ryan Gosling masks.
Oh my god.
That's awesome.
That's crazy.
It's like the V for Vendetta mask at the Scientology
Center. Kinda, but actually, surprisingly, creepier.
Really?
Yeah. Well, because
yeah, I would think it would be creepier
because it's closer to a real face.
With the eyes looking through. It's really creepy.
It's an Uncanny Valley thing.
But it's so good. And then it ties with another Ryan Gosling movie, Blue Valentine. They were just both that great.
Was that 2011?
Wasn't it?
No, it was last year.
It was last year.
That last year was 2011.
No, it was 2010.
It was 2010.
It was? Yeah. When did it come out?
I'll look it up.
It came out in December of 2010.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well then Crazy Stupid Love.
You're like, you know what? I don't know a guy who's like, I hate Ryan Gosling. Because you know what? You're like...
I know someone who does.
Really?
What? Yeah, he says he always looks the same.
Is it more of a jealous thing?
Probably.
Yeah. Probably
I want to be Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It'd be amazing.
I want you to be Ryan Gosling.
Whoa there.
I mean, not weird. You're dating my sister way.
Things just got weird.
I just want somebody in my personal vicinity to be Ryan Gosling. Yeah.
Any of you, really.
Yeah. but no, the movie is great because it's like... It's like everybody's. It's funny because the cinematographer is really a well-known cinematographer. The guy who wrote it is a really known writer. It was kind of like, hey, let's showcase our talents. And the acting was really well done. Again, especially, I'd say I like the supporting cast more than I like Ryan Gosling. Even though Ryan Gosling did an amazing job,
That's just how good the supporting cast.
Yes, that's how good the supporting cast is. Especially again, Albert Brooks, because he played. It's subtly, but very scary.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible.
Even,
I was terrified.
Bryan Cranston was really good in it.
Oh, yeah. Bryan Cranston is always amazing.
Yeah.
I heard a little interview with all of them and how he talked about how he let everybody kind of develop their own character. Like the limp was Bryan Cranston's idea. And he's like, well, if I was a stunt guy and I had been doing this a lot, I'd be hurt, you know? Mm-hmm. And he had a limp and even though the limp wasn't because of his job, it was because of Albert Brooks, but it was just so well done. Everything was all the supporting actors.
I don't want to give anything away, but that scene where it's near the end with Albert Brooks and Bryan Cranston in the garage.
Yes.
Basically, all you need to tell someone is just don't shake Albert Brooks' hand.
Yeah.
Never shake
Albert Brooks'
that
hand.
That was so yeah.
Or
so
make sure
good.
You're looking at his other hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, even then, man. That's not. Yeah, that's the other thing I learned from this movie. Albert Brooks is really fast.
Yeah.
Like some serious prestidigitation.
Fat guy, yeah.
Yeah. And even Ron Perlman was like really well when he's talking about how his family pinches his cheek and calls, you know, mm-hmm. like, you felt bad. You're like, I totally get you, man. I totally get you.
Yeah.
And it was really well done. There's a lot of good scenes in this movie. And I know.
Even her husband is really good. Yeah. I can't remember his name, but he's good too.
Because that character could have been written like he's just jealous. Like, mm-hmm. He invited him to like dinner and like he even like gave them privacy. When he came back home and there was this party, he's like, he took the kid and he's like, let mommy talk to her friend. And I thought it was really well done.
It was a great,
done.
Like, a character that could very easily have been one-dimensional.
Yeah.
They gave him more than... And it's always a trick, especially with those, you know, one scene or two scene supporting characters like that. It's very hard to make the audience, like, sympathize, especially with both sides. Because it would be very easy to give this guy one scene, make him a dick, and make it a black and white thing. Like, you're rooting for Ryan Gosling. But, you know, the real world isn't like that. So it's like, no, here's a guy. And here is... Here's the arc he's going through right now.
Yeah.
Here's, you know, the emotional spine, you know, that he's trying to fulfill.
And it made it hard to hate him.
Yeah exactly.
Really and because you're like, you find yourself rooting for this guy. Like, oh, get it together and get your family together.
Yeah.
No, I want her to be with Ryan Gosling because I'm already sympathizing with him. But but that's the real world.
Yeah. And there was such well-written. My other favorite thing is a lot of people what's it called? They compared this to The Getaway and Steve McQueen's acting because he did a lot of that, a lot of not talking. And my favorite scene is the what I call the Steve McQueen scene is where he slaps Christina Hendrickson. Because a lot of movies don't do that because, A, you'd make him unlikable, the character, right away. Mm-hmm. But they went there because in like The Getaway, he does the same thing. Steve McQueen slaps Ally McGraw. Because she F's up something. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's what he would do. That's what he would – if that character, that's – I totally believe it because that's what he would do to get information it's like, I don't have time to talk to you and figure out if you're lying. I'm just going to slap the shit out of you. and that'll teach you that I'm not messing around. And it was really well done. And it was warranted from the character, and it was executed right, the right way in order. And you never heard like, oh, this movie promotes, you know, violence against women. Nobody was up in arms because it was just such well-written characters. I feel, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those movies that like objectively I go, yeah, that was really good. And all of this, you know, the acting and the writing and direction, they're all very good. Just didn't push buttons for me.
It wasn't your type of movie. It's, yeah, totally.
It's not science fiction.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So down to your number one.
Do your recap.
Oh, my recap.
We already did my number one.
Oh, okay. So here we go. My
what was
recap.
Your number one?
Moneyball.
Oh, okay. That's right.
So number 5, Tree of Life. 4, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. 3, Take Shelter. 2, Moneyball. Number 1, Drive.
Okay. My number 5 was Midnight in Paris. 4 was We Need to Talk About Kevin. 3, Take Shelter. 2, Shame. And Drive.
My number 5 was Attack the Block. Number 4 was also We Need to Talk About Kevin. My number 3 was also Midnight in Paris. Number 2 was Martha, Marcy May, Marlene. And my number 1 was Drive. And not Blue Valentine, because I forgot when that came out.
But I just feel like I need the...
That happened to me one time.
I need the...
I don't know. I just... Ryan Gosling had a good year for me because he had like the fucked up crazy action, and then he also had like the fun, funny,
yeah.
Crazy Stupid Love.
Crazy
I was going to do all
was
three.
Good.
Yeah, no, it's
and
it's
he's
a great
terrific
movie.
In that
yeah.
movie.
Yeah.
He's so funny. We just watched that again. Oh, so
there's nothing he can't do. I'm going to go on record and saying there's nothing he can't do.
Nothing he can't do.
He's like, and this is a totally different side of the spectrum. I say this with Daniel Day-Lewis. There's nothing he can't do. Like you could put him in a Judd Apatow movie, and I'm sure he would be amazing in it.
Now I want to see Daniel Day-Lewis in a Judd Apatow
movie.
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
And that's how I feel. I mean, not saying that Ryan Gosling is up to the Daniel Day-Lewis's level, but Ryan Gosling could be in any movie, period piece, comedy, drama, and he knows how to rock and roll.
Well, last I heard, he was thinking about retiring soon already.
Well,
so.
Ryan Gosling was, or Daniel Day-Lewis?
Ryan Gosling.
Well,
Daniel Day-Lewis will act until he dies.
Yeah, he's
Ryan Gosling is going to retire already?
He's following Daniel Day-Lewis's...
Yeah, he is.
Footsteps. He's going to retire.
He's going to go make shoes.
Make shoes, then come back and do Gangs of New York Part 2.
That's terrible news.
Like, after Blue Valentine, he and Michelle Williams were both saying, like, yeah, I'm thinking about getting away from acting. And I remember she said something about being a laundress. I'm like, what? Who says they're going to be a laundress?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nobody says that. Okay. So, but Michelle
Williams. So my number 5, my 5 in review, Muppets is number 5. Mission Impossible 4 is number 4. Source Code for number 3, Contagion is number 2, and Moneyball is my number 1.
Nice.
Okay, so we're an hour and 41 minutes, and that's basically our list, guys, for the listeners.
Yeah.
And now we're going to go into our honorable mentions, and I feel like we're going to go another like half hour with this, with this list.
You guys are going to go as long on just a discussion podcast as we do
on a commentary.
With an going along with an actual movie.
Well, we have guests.
Sometimes it happens.
Sometimes
it
happens.
Sometimes, like every week.
Wow. You guys can do a commentary about our list.
Commentary.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of you. Let's start with you and give us some of your honorable mentions.
All right. Like we said, Attack the Block and Moneyball. I also, and Mission Impossible and Take Shelter. I also included The Descendants, Warrior, X-Men First Class. I really like, that was actually my favorite superhero movie of the year, X-Men First Class. Super 8 was on there, Tree of Life, and Rise of the Planet of the Apes. So...
That all pretty cool. I did like X-Men First Class, and I think it's mostly because of James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender.
I think
if it would have been other actors, it wouldn't have been as good, and I wouldn't have cared as much.
They were a great duo.
They are a great duo. I'm not as impressed by Matthew Vaughn as I think a lot of other people are. I don't think Kick-Ass has its problems, and I think X-Men First Class, quite honestly, has its problems too.
Again, like I said, if it wasn't for these two actors,
those two guys are the guys to do it. And it's so hard to, like, how are you really going to fill the shoes of Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen and, like, be better than they are? And you're not going to be better, but
they definitely
those are huge shoes to fill, and they both did a great job.
Mm-hmm. If it had just been them, I would have liked it more. I didn't like this stuff with all the kids.
That's
I didn't
true.
Care about the kids.
Okay. Yeah, me too. I didn't mind,
and
actually.
The black guy dies first. Are you kidding? You literally made the token black guy die first to prove how dangerous the situation was for everybody else.
Hey,
really?
It's a sign of the times.
I mean, they are in the 60s at that point, so I guess it's like makes sense from that point of view, but I couldn't believe that actually happened.
I was not at all surprised.
Yeah.
So yes, some of my honorable mentions. Warrior. I really enjoyed Warrior. I saw it on video, and there's a lot of problems with this movie. I understand that, and it's very like paint by numbers movie. But the acting, again, is one of these movies where the acting like is so well done that you forget that it's a cliche movie and you've seen this movie 100 times.
I never forgot.
Really?
Nope.
Was Nick Nolte
he's nominated for an Oscar?
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah. And Tom Hardy and Tom Hardy for me right now, he's like hitting in all the right. Forget about he's playing Bane. It just even his little part in Inception. Slow down.
So what I'm getting now is we need to have Tom Hardy and Ryan Gosling in a movie together.
Yeah.
With Michael Fassbender. With Michael Fassbender.
Please. Look how red she is right now.
she's like bright red.
She needs some alone time.
Oh my God, do that, please. Somebody make that movie.
These guys are amazing in this movie. And then what else do I have? Warrior, I have I Saw the Devil. I really enjoyed I Saw the Devil. And this it was last year.
Was that?
Yeah.
Or was it? Okay. My this whole year just blurred together. I don't remember when what came out.
Mm-hmm. Attack of the Block, which you talked about, Mission Impossible, Elite Squad, again, the movie I just saw 3 days ago, but it was amazing. a movie I really enjoyed. I was late on this watching this movie, but Beginners
was
just so well done.
Yeah.
That's an honorable mention.
Again, everybody in the cast, and Christopher Plummer, he got nominated. Something that we haven't seen him do, and he did fucking well.
Yeah.
And the girl who was in Inglourious Basterds,
Melanie Laurent.
Yes, she was really good. In
Shoshana from Basterds.
Yeah, she was really good. And Ewan McGregor always surprises me. Like I think like I haven't pegged. He's gonna do this, and he's just doing some crazy stuff. And this was really well done. The voiceover was really well done in this movie, and great directing. And again, the cinematography very subtle and really cool, and I like what they did.
I feel like Mike Mills and his Miranda July, their husband and wife, and it's like they switched. I liked her first movie way better than his, and then now I liked his second movie way better than hers.
I didn't like his first movie.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, no,
I meant hers. I like me and you and everyone we know way better than Thumbsucker, and then the future was okay, but I loved Beginners.
Yeah, again, you just hit you exactly. Thumbsucker, man, we were really pissed we saw that movie because we actually paid to see that.
Blockbuster favorites, 99 cents.
Yeah, we didn't. We went to the ArcLight. We might have not paid because you were working there.
No, we went to the Lemley. We went to the Sunset.
Yeah, we were fucked on that one. And so anyway, Beginners really well done. Kevin, your honorable mention.
Let's see. I have Tree of Life, Martha Marcy, Mae Marlene, Moneyball, 50-50.
Oh yeah, that's a good one too.
And Melancholia.
Okay, I wasn't joking when I said Fast Five was an honorable mention.
No, we talked about this.
No, really, I'm serious.
No, we talked about this in the movies. I forgot what episode we talked about this. But you really,
was it Heist Movies?
Maybe. I think it was Heist Movies, You said it was your honorable mention.
Yeah, it's just so much fun. Anyway.
I'm working for the editor of that movie right now, as a matter of fact. Yeah?
I thought
Can you say what movie you're working on?
I'd rather not.
Okay. But it's a really good movie.
It's easy to figure out based on what I just said, but anyway.
That's true. I really, really liked Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
I haven't seen it yet still.
It's a good one. Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah.
Rango, I love how silly this movie is.
Johnny Depp's good in everything. I mean, when except Tim Burton movies.
Yeah, wait, that was...
I said besides Tim Burton movies.
Well, he's good in Tim Burton movies. The problem is the rest of the movie is crap.
This is okay. You hit it on the head.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I love how silly and funny and quirky this. I was so perplexed and charmed by Rango. I really loved it. Melancholia, Shame, and then Bellflower. Did anybody else see Bellflower?
You know what? Damn, it was one of the things where we wanted to see it, and then it was gone.
It played for like a week.
I
feel like I should have had it in my top five just because no one else saw it. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It's a crazy, like, it starts off a little slow and it's kind of a mumblecore movie, but then it, like, hits this hard ride and you're like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
Like, they're building a flamethrower and they want to be like Lord Humongous from The Road Warrior and rule the post-apocalyptic terrain after everything's gone to shit.
But it's a love story at heart.
It's a love story at heart. It's a love story slash bromance.
It is. I love the, when that happens. It's like, yeah, they want to be the overlords of the galactic post-apocalyptic wasteland.
But they're dealing with their relationships.
But at heart, it's really just a coming-of-age story.
Yeah.
I just love it when that happens.
It's a Nazi vampire movie, but it's a love story.
It actually says it's going to be released again in 2012.
Sweet.
Oh, March 2012. I want to see it. So on IMDb.
Definitely see it because it was it was awesome.
So is it going to be on your best of 2012 list then?
If it's coming out again. Well, I mean, I guess. I don't know. I saw it in theaters. I saw it at the Limley. It wasn't like a special screening or anything.
Yeah. But it only played for like a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure only in LA and New York.
All right. So if it has if it has like a wide release this year, then yeah, it'll probably be on 2012's best of because it was really awesome. It had some hiccups at the beginning. But once they hit their groove, it's like, what the hell? And he built his own camera to make the movie.
That's what I heard.
They built the car, this like working car and all these working flamethrowers. They make me feel really lazy with all the stuff that they did just for this one movie.
Yeah.
Cool. Evan Glodell, I think his name is.
Curious to see what he does next.
Yeah.
We talked about most of mine, Planet of the Apes, Drive, Dragon Tattoo. I'm going to go ahead and put The Thing on there. I really like The Thing. The remake, and Ricardo just shot death glares at me. I mean, it's not an amazing film. There's no, like, at the end of it, there was no great reason or truth that they communicated about why they, but just as like, here's this fun, you know, tour through the old movie that you liked, but with better effects.
Better effects.
Not well. The effects in the context of the time, the effects are better in the original at the layer. But I thought the effects were fine in this one. No? I'm getting death glares all around the table.
Yeah.
I didn't
mind it.
I thought they were fine. I really like the original, so I was, all right.
Well, we had to disagree somewhere, and this is where we disagree.
Maybe I need to see it again. I only saw it the once, but I did see it in the theater. But it was, I really loved the original, and maybe it was just a Muppets thing where it's like, I was just glad to go through this world again.
But I feel like they went through the world and shit on everything.
Really?
It's like, fuck this. This doesn't matter. Well, there was an axe there. Let's put that axe there again. I don't know how this really happened. Let's just make something crazy up that doesn't really seem like what, like nothing that happened in this one really seems to correlate with what they just kind of made up their own versions for what happened. Like with the way that things behaved, it didn't seem the same to me. Like the combining of the two guys into one to make the thing that they find at the beginning of the 1980 version. I don't know. It's all very, and then the whole prequel, remake, reboot, everything melding together. I don't know. I was just very disappointed.
I don't want there to be a sequel and to be the reboot of The Thing. That's what I don't want to be.
Yeah, are they talking about doing that? I think there's no reason to do that.
Yeah, they should. Yeah.
Well, there was no reason to make this movie either.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's no reason to make a lot of movies. But I don't disagree with that. I really love the ending. And I think it was a really ballsy way to end a movie like this that was clearly like a studio cash grab on this thing that people already loved. To just okay, spoilers if you haven't seen it. To just fade out and not really resolve how the main character, whether or not she lives or not.
Well, I mean,
that's ballsy as shit.
They had set that tone with the first remake.
So the first remake?
You mean
the John Carpenter?
Yeah, that's a remake.
Yeah, no, I understand that. So, but you're saying the John Carpenter.
Yeah,
book. Yeah.
So just 10 seconds ago, you were saying about how this movie shit all over the original.
It did.
But
that's the one. Well, I mean, they set that ground. They're like, all right, well, they ended that one ambiguously, so I guess we can end this one ambiguously, and they'll still like it. I feel like that was just them appeasing to the audience, which, I mean, I was okay with the ending. That didn't matter to me. I didn't have a problem with that. It was everything leading up to the ending.
Okay, see, I didn't have an issue with everything leading up to the ending, and I really like the ending, and for the same reason, I really love the ending of the first one.
I do.
Well, I just love the first Kurt Russell one wasn't in it. That's my problem.
At the same time, I'm just glad they didn't decide, oh, it's going to be his brother, because I remember they were going to do that for a while. Like, really? Just have it be MacReady's brother. I'm like, fuck you.
Okay, yeah. That would have pissed me off.
Yeah.
Also, what else? Planet of the Apes. I'm going to, not because it's a great movie, but I think it does deserve talking about, I'm going to say Sucker Punch. Because Sucker Punch is... No. Sucker Punch is not a good movie. It's not. But it's close to being something
horrible?
Really, really awesome.
No. It's past being something horrible. Yeah.
it's close it's, and we did a commentary for it on Down in Front. And yeah, we watched it in the theater together. Yeah,
I didn't fall asleep though.
Yes, I did fall asleep because I was just like totally disconnected from it and it didn't give a shit. And I was like, yeah, this movie is terrible. And then we went to go do a commentary for it for Down in Front, and I went to rewatch it, and it actually broke my heart because it's really close, or a lot closer than I thought it was, to being a decent film, at least making sense story-wise. And it's not quite there, but it's almost. It's a lot closer than I think people give it credit for. So
I'm not
you're shaking your head.
It's
not actually an honorable mention, but I think it deserves more credit than it. I think it deserves more credit than it gets, because the failing of it is it's trying to do this multi-leveled metaphor thing, and the metaphors don't actually line up. If you know, because there's like three levels of reality to it, and the one level of reality connects to the other level of reality, but the third level of reality doesn't connect to the other two, but it almost does. And if he had just tweaked it a little more, it would, and it would be a lot better, I think.
So if Christopher Nolan had made this movie, it might have made sense.
Mm. Mm. See, I don't think Inception is that great, personally, so...
I'm just saying that didn't make me want to shoot myself in the face,
yeah,
like Sucker Punch did.
Yeah.
If we were making a top five worst movies of last year...
Yes, I would definitely number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Have you guys seen it since that first time?
No.
Why would anyone do that to themselves?
I wouldn't have, except we did the commentary for it. But it was upon that revisit that, and we all agreed, it was like, wow, there's more to this than we thought, or it's closer to not being total shit than we thought it was. So if you can bear it, I'd say give it another shot and see. And like I said, it's not a great movie. It's not even a good movie, but it's.
But it's close to not being shit.
It's closer to not being shit than I think people give it credit for.
Well, in that case, then Transformers 3 was close to not being shit.
No. Transformers 3 was better than I thought it was going to be.
I'd rather see Transformers 3 than Sucker Punch again.
That's, did you see Transformers 3 once?
Yeah.
I would watch Sucker Punch before I'd watch Transformers 3 again.
I would
watch Sucker Punch before I'd watch any of the Transformers movies again.
Yes.
Except for Transformers, the movie.
The animated movie.
Transformers 3 is also better than I thought it was going to be, but that's not saying anything at all. Yeah.
But all right. So anything else that you wasn't on our list that we haven't talked about?
That's everything.
All right. So there you go. We're at 2 hours probably. but we're only a weekly podcast, so you can listen to this throughout the week. You're good, dude.
Cut it up. Part one,
yeah,
part
cut
two.
It up, yeah.
The sequel.
So anyway.
But if you put this onto a Down in Front of commentary, that's your whole week right there. Yeah. 2 hours, then two and a half hours.
Yeah. So there you go. Again, you could find this on the interwebs at www. Yes, I do the W's.
I was laughing at saying the interwebs.
The lists filmpodcast.com. And then you could find us on Twitter at the film podcast. And then you could find me on Twitter at Ricardo, ULTRERES.
I'm at Jenei, that's JEHNEIGH.
Hey, you can find me at Brian Finifter, BRIANFINIFTER.
You can find me at @AnAdamScott, @_AdamScott with 2 T's.
And you can find me at KZubriBeer, that's ZUBERBIER.
And what else? You could find Brian on his podcast at down in front
downinfront.net, as in hey
.net.
You down in front, yes.
.net, not .com,
correct, yes.
And then the Twitter is
also down in front
at down in front, right?
Yeah.
And then it's too many @'s and W's and HTTPS.
As opposed to the question mark,
yeah.
Sign on,
yeah.
On Twitter. Which is a very popular one.
I know. And then if for in-depth reviews of films, go over to Adam Scott's website, which is?
shootingthescript.wordpress.com.
See, the WordPress always trips me up.
Dude, okay, for you, at the in March. So wait, what is this going up? Not next week, but the week after?
Yeah.
Next Monday.
All right. Well, March 1st, we're going to go to shootingthescript.com.
Okay. But for this, if you're listening to this, don't. Do WordPress.
If you go to shootingthescript.com, it's going to forward you to shootingthescript.wordpress.com right now.
Then you're good then.
So,
yeah.
Either way.
All right. So there you go. That's all the information to find us. And it'll all be in the website at thelistfilmpodcast.com again. And that's it for this week. And have a good week.